It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. We have a really, I love these guys. Great panel for you. Ashley Esquetha joins us, longtime CNET person. She's got some new projects she'll tell you about. From TechCrunch, the great Alex Wilhelm. Of course, with those two, we're going to talk about gaming. Diablo 4 is on the horizon. We'll also talk about Reddit. Is it the end of the line for everybody's favorite social network? And Google, yet another Google product down the tubes. It's kind of hard to believe. All that and more coming up next on Twit.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 932, recorded Sunday, June 18th, 2023. There's always a cow level. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Duo. Duo protects against breaches with a leading access management suite, providing strong, multi-layered defenses to only allow legitimate users in. For any organization concerned about being breached that needs a solution fast, Duo quickly enables strong security and improves user productivity. Visit cs.co/twit today for a free trial. And by ExpressVPN. If you want to get way more shows and save money while you're at it, go to expressvpn.com/twit. Protect your privacy and security today. Go to expressvpn.com/twit and get a 3 extra months free with a 1-year package. And by Mint Mobile. Inflation is everywhere, whether it's gas, utilities, or your favorite streaming services. Thankfully, Mint Mobile can give you a much-needed break. Get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month and get the plan shipped to your door for free at mintmobile.com/twit. And by Grammarly Go. You'll be amazed at what you can do with Grammarly Go. Go to grammarly.com/go to download and learn more about Grammarly Go. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. The show where we get together with the best people I can find on short notice on Father's Day and talk about the week's tech news. Alex Wilhelm, a new father, actually showed up. I really thought you might not.
No. I said I would, and I'm here, and I'm going to miss bedtime tonight. So this is kind of like a vacation for me. So we need to make sure we make it to at least 7:15, and then
actually,
then we're good.
That's a good Father's Day gift. Is like let Liza do bedtime.
Yeah. Well, you know, she's not excited about it. She's a little bit annoyed because whenever I go on Twitter, I just disappear for the back half of the day. And now that we have a kid, it's actually slightly annoying that I disappear.
Six months old. Oh, and you're loving it. How are you feeling? You're kind of coming out of the exhaustion zone at this point. Yes.
Yeah. Coming out of that. I mean, if you don't have a kid, you haven't seen this, but the amazing thing is you'll wake up on like a Saturday morning and your child will have learned a new thing. Like the weekend, Ada discovered she had a tongue. She just stuck her tongue out for 3 days and it was hilarious.
Great? Yeah.
Learned how to blow raspberries. But at the same time, she was eating solid food for the first time. Our baby is now covered in sweet potatoes. Like it's hilarious. Like it's things you never thought were going to happen. Keep happening. And it keeps you on your toes. And, I'm tired as hell, but I'm good.
Yeah. You know? Congratulations. It's great to see you. Alex works for TechCrunch in a variety of capacities. You do the podcast still, right?
We are 600 and some episodes in on that.
Wow.
Amazingly enough. Wow. Yeah.
What's it called?
It's called Equity. If you want to learn more about venture capital and startups. And if you don't like those two things, you will hate that show.
Well, I'm going to get your take on Spez in a second.
Yes.
But first, let's say hello to Ashley Esquetha. Always a pleasure to see Ashley. And
pleasure to be here.
How old is your baby now?
40. I mean, it's amazing. No, he's 4. He'll be 4 going. He's 4 going on 18, it feels like. He is.
It's amazing. He's 4 now. I can't believe
he's
that.
A delight. Yeah, his birthday's in a couple weeks, and we hired, he's really into Star Wars, like really into lightsabers, very specifically. Everything is a sword right now.
Yes.
A sword or a weapon. Yes. Everything's a weapon.
Yes.
And so we hired a Jedi to come to his birthday party and teach the kids how to do lightsaber combat. And then Darth Vader's going to show up in a half hour later, and then they all get to fight Darth Vader.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Birthdays
have gone
a long
way.
I'll be waiting for my Mom of the Year award.
Yeah,
I'm waiting for that. So that'll
my
be
mom
really
gave
nice
me a
December.
Stick for birthday. That was it.
It's a sword. Congratulations. You got a sword for your birthday.
I jumped off a wall, landed on it, broke into three pieces. That was the end of that.
Then you had three swords.
Ashley's been busy, though. Since you left CNET, you wrote a book coming out soon, right?
This summer, The Art of Psychonauts 2. If you love Double Fine, the game studio, if you happen to cross the 32-episode Psychodyssey documentary, which was just recently made eligible for the Emmys, which is really cool, I wrote the art book about it. So it's a real nice companion piece. It's massive. For $50, you get 400 pages of amazing Psychonauts art. And
it is a certain style, isn't it? That Psychonauts
beautiful
style,
bespoke. Yeah. Everything's bespoke, which is really incredible.
It's hand painted.
It's all hand. Well, wow. the concept art team is just a machine. I mean, they're from their character designers to their 3D artists. It's just really just an amazing team of
you know, you could kind of tell. I think that's one of the things that makes the Psychonauts such a great game, is you can kind of tell it's a human made it.
Yes. Well, there's a philosophy that they follow called the Psychonauts Wonk in that specific game, which is really interesting. And we dive into that in the book. It's there are three very specific rules, and it makes the world kind of look what it looks like, which is pretty neat.
Ashley has just launched a new business. We'll talk about that, too, in a little bit. Rowdy Skeleton. Woo! I love the name. But first, speaking of skeletons, let's talk about Reddit.
Ugh.
Holy cow. Holy cow.
Yeah.
And
oh,
I'm sad. You know, I kind of seen this happen with kind of slow motion with Twitter. And apparently Steve Huffman, who is the current CEO and the one of the original founders of Reddit, admires Elon Musk and is kind of following along in the Elon Musk playbook, which seems demented.
Yeah. It doesn't seem, you know, I was just reading
Casey Liss, a platformer?
Casey Newton's.
Newton.
Casey Newton's bit about Twitter was talking about this is actually like maybe one of the worst acquisitions in the history of Wall Street. And so I'm like, I don't know that that's anything that you would like to aspire to.
Do you really
want
to emulate? You want to emulate that. Yeah, the latest Twitter news is they're getting kicked out of their offices in Colorado
because they didn't
pay the rent, which they're not doing in every other office as well, including San Francisco, the headquarters, and England. Apparently, the Royal Estate is suing them for rent. I don't think you should really stiff the king, but maybe that's just me. And now they also have announced they're not going to pay their Google Cloud bills. Which is kind of problematic.
I'm going to correct myself here. This is actually from the thing that Casey posted an excerpt of was from a Puck News post.
Puck is great. I subscribe.
Puck
I pay
is great.
For Puck.
Will Elon lose control of Twitter is the name of the article. So it was very, very interesting.
Pay for platformer Casey Newton's and I pay for Puck. Oh, yeah. I think it's pretty clear. I don't know. We got sidetracked from Reddit. We'll get back to it in a moment, folks. Don't worry. We're not going to talk about Elon all day. We have, but we've got new villains in town. I do think it looks like, although Elon at their latest upfront said ad sales are up 40%. But when I go to Twitter and I look at what they're selling ads to, if I have to see that stupid airplane ad one more time, I'm just going to plotz. So I'm thinking
I block them.
Oh, you block them.
I just block them. Like it's most of them. I'm just like, this is junk. Like it's all junk. It feels like as seen on TV, it feels like I'm watching late night infomercials.
It is. It's all that crap.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't think you should replace your weed whacker with a spinning steel blade. Ah. That seems like a bad idea.
That's
really
amazing.
The steel wire cutter trimmer head never breaks. No, but you might. It will break you. Why would you put a blade on something unshielded? That seems so dumb. Like, oh yeah, well, you know, you could do is you could put a chainsaw on it. That would really work.
Yeah. why not just, why not just put a chainsaw at the end? It's just like Legend of Zelda. You just fuse a chainsaw with a stick. It's just, that's it. You just go forward and you
maybe
can just
that's
do
where all
things.
Of the new Silicon Valley ideas will come from Tears of the Kingdom.
Only Tears of the Kingdom. Yeah.
Oh, so you just can block those and you'll never see them again.
I just block them. There are some like larger companies that I haven't blocked because they're, you know, they're still advertising. Like I haven't blocked McDonald's because they have totally unhinged content sometimes. But most of them, I just block them.
So Burfy Mart, which is, by the way, I don't know if that's inspired or a terrible name, but I can just say
ChatGPT wrote that name. Yeah, 100%. I'll put money on that.
Block Burfy Mart. Yeah, ChatGPT probably came up with the idea of putting a blade on a weed whacker too.
That's got to be.
That sounds like exactly what an evil computer program would say.
Give me ideas for low cost products with an element of danger. Oh. Give me 50 product ideas. Burfy Mart.
So,
yeah, got their money first.
So this is William Cohen, who actually has a lot of M&A experience, right, Alex? He's a smart guy. Writing on Puck, saying what seems likely is that the banks are just going to say, okay, you're done.
You've had your fun.
They have $13 billion worth of debt. Elon apparently is making the interest payments, which we thought he might not even do. Next one's due in September. Yeah.
He made the first two that I saw, but I did a little math on the ad numbers that they had for, I think it was late 2022 and then the start of this year compared to their historical revenue results, and then kind of figured out their debt payments. The company might be making enough money to do that, but I think when you calculate it also in like cloud expenses and personnel and so forth, it's probably pretty far in the red still. And I don't think it's going to change because I don't think it's becoming a better place to be. And not to open up this particular can of worms, but Twitter today was mostly Elon and Joe Rogan bullying a pediatrician.
Oh my God. I actually said, that's it. I'm done. Cause I was using Twitter read only.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they can gang up on Peter Hotez, who is, you know, this guy went to school and studied this stuff. He's an MD. He's a immunologist. He is a public health expert. And for Joe Rogan and RFK Jr. and Elon Musk to say, oh, no, we know better, is infuriating. And now they're saying, well, if you're right, you should debate us on the Joe Rogan show, to which Peter is wisely saying no.
Yeah. Do you want to sit there for 3 hours with the guy who made people eat bugs on television and try to talk about your life's work? It's not the intellectual dark web. It's the intellectual web of dweebs. Like, these people are pathetic and small minded. And what's bad here isn't just that they apparently now just are the only personalities on Twitter that matter in terms of reach, but also they're going to get people killed. And I'm not in favor of disinformation that leads to celebrity's health outcomes.
It's fine if Balaji wants to bet $1 million that Bitcoin's going to get to $1 million in 3 months.
Yeah.
A bet which he lost. I hope somebody collected on that. When you're talking about public health, this is not a play. And the problem is a lot of people, I think, see this and believe it. They don't.
Oh, 100%. They take what Rogan says is gospel. This is like a very, even though, you know, he'll say like, wow, I didn't know that. Hey, look that up on Google. And it's like, oh God, like, no. I think, for me, it can boil it down to what Mark Twain has said famously, which is never argue with a fool. They'll simply bring you down to their level and then beat you with experience. So it's just, you can't argue with, you know, people who come, you know, prepared with bad faith arguments and, you know, these sort of like, there's no changing minds there. And I think that it's just like, we just want you to come on and then crow to people that we owned you. Like it's about winning.
It's the Shapiro method of debate, which is just try to just talk over people and then claim that you won. I like that Mark Twain quote, though. I'm more familiar with the porcine version, which is don't wrestle with a pig because you'll both get dirty and the pig will enjoy it.
Which is a very
similar kind of argument.
Indeed.
There.
I think that was Lyndon sentiment. Johnson actually said that.
Oh, thank you, Leo, for the historical reference. But I want to go back to the Reddit Elon point that got us here, because I think that when people are discussing in a business context the desire to emulate Elon, what they mean more than how Elon has particularly run Twitter's ad business per se is more that run a much smaller company, that's much leaner and with much less, I would say, employee say in how things are done. I don't think Elon Musk is part of the pro-union caucus, in other words. And so if you can work your employees more and get more out of them for a less kind of overall costly cost basis, well, then why not? And I think Spez is trying to get his company public. And I think he's struggling with
that. Let's go through the history.
Well, desperate.
Let's go through the backstory so we could talk about. By the way,
yeah, there's a lot happening with Reddit. Yes. Like that has led us to this point of like there's literal Reddit blackouts in some of the largest
stories. Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, not LBJ, GBS, George Bernard Shaw. Neville wrestle with pigs. You both get dirty and the pig likes it.
Oh, I was close, but yeah.
Right. Even better. Between Mark Twain, George Bernard Shaw, and Lyndon Baines Johnson. We got it covered. So it all started not so long ago. Reddit decided they wanted to go public. I'm sure you covered this, Alex, when it happened. But what are their prospects for an IPO? Good? What were their prospects?
They filed privately.
Okay.
So I'm just pulling that up now. I forgot the date. December 16th, 2021. So they filed privately
to go public,
which they can do. But keep in mind what was going on in late 2021. It was the apex. It was the peak of the last asset and venture capital boom. So they filed probably with great aspirations to go public right before everything changed and went kind of to hell, frankly. So I think they're probably dealing with some impatient bankers and backers.
They wanted to go public.
I think you also argue that don't you also argue that like this is sort of a very similar problem that a lot of tech companies had, which was they saw this, like Meta is a really good example of this, where they saw a huge boom in users during the time when everyone was staying home and locked down with nothing to do but be on the internet or use their Meta Quest, and decided that that was going to be the new normal and that they somehow convinced people, oh yeah, these are our new normal numbers. They'll just always be this way.
I mean, a great example of that was Roblox, right? I mean, Roblox was doing a simply insanely amazing business at the time. Just and Coinbase was very similar. Money was just raining down from the sky. Incredible profits. These companies looked, bulletproof and, you know, generation making sources of wealth. But things changed. And so Reddit, I think, is dealing with, yes, a change in the valuations climate. And also, as you know, everyone in the podcast world knows, Leo, a decline in overall ad spend. And so it's a tougher market for them. And I think where you're going next is how they reacted to that.
Well, let me ask first, have they ever had a profit?
It's hard to say. I don't probably think so, because they sold back in the day for not that much money. And then they got other forms of investment.
They were acquired by Condé Nast. Condé spun it off as a standalone, although they still hold the majority of shares, filed for the private IPO a couple of years ago, but didn't do anything about it. And they were apparently, according to the information, planning this IPO. This is from a story on Valentine's Day, so a few months ago, in the second half. We are in the second half, by the way, or we will soon be in the second half. Is it hard, Alex? You're an expert. Can you do an IPO if you've never turned a profit?
So you can. It depends a little bit on how your business is set up. A lot of software companies, for example, will go public when they're growing pretty quickly, but still consuming cash. And then people expect their growth rate to slow down over time and then to become more profitable, a bit like Salesforce or Microsoft or whatever. The issue that Reddit has is that it's a social media company, kind of. And so its comps are not Salesforce or Atlassian. They're Meta or Snap or Pinterest. And those companies tend to trade at lower multiples. And so I think there's probably less market willingness to allow them to go public if they're unprofitable, or more importantly, if they're still consuming a lot of cash. Because you can be cash flow positive and still unprofitable under GAAP terms. And I know that's too deep, but the point is profit's a little squishy. And so I don't think we know offhand how well Reddit's doing on that metric. But because they haven't gone public yet, Leo, I presume the answer is not so well.
Well, and that's probably why they filed in 2021, but still never went public, because they were waiting for something to get better, market conditions, the market itself, or perhaps their own profitability. As far as I know, they've never had a turn to profit. So they have raised hundreds of millions of dollars, right? Last round of funding was a $10 billion valuation in 2021. Oh. That might encourage you. You know, we're worth $10 billion.
That seems so high. I don't know.
It was reportedly hoping for a $15 billion valuation on the market. They were on the precipice, according to the information, of going public last year, but then hit pause Meanwhile, Fidelity, who has, by the way, valued Twitter at $13 billion, interesting number, Fidelity valued Reddit at $6.6 billion. So there is some gap between what Reddit thinks it's worth and what everybody else might think it's worth. In any event, it was clear, I think, probably at the highest levels of Reddit, we got to figure out a way to make more money. Right?
If we're going to go. And how? What a great idea, Leo. Nothing wrong after that.
Initially, their initial. So here's what they, I think, did. They look at the balance sheet. They say, well, we have this much revenue. You know, we have advertising. It wasn't a great advertising platform, but they have advertising. I pay for Reddit. There is a subscription system for Reddit. Mm-hmm. And then they're looking at their bandwidth bills. And they're saying, well, you know what's interesting? More than half of our bandwidth, I'm guessing a number, but I would guess more than half of our bandwidth isn't serving our web page or our apps. It's serving third-party apps. That's costing us some large amount of money. We should monetize that. Oh, by the way, no third-party app has ads, so we're not monetizing the third-party apps at all. And so Steve Hoffman, who started Reddit with Alexis Ohanian and Aaron Schwartz a couple of months later, and it came back as CEO after Reddit had a very rocky up and down leadership problem. Ellen Powell, for instance, who left, furious, I'm sure, with the boys club. So Steve took it, said, it's my company. I started it. I know how to run it. I'm going to run it. Steve says, well, I know one way we can make some more money is cut off these third party apps. Look, Elon just did it on Twitter. in fact, Twitter's done it before. Third-party apps suck bandwidth and don't show your ads. So Twitter cut off the third party a long time ago. They slowly kind of came back. Elon cut it off in a very ugly fashion late last year when he just turned off the API and put a lot of companies in mortal danger. So I think what happened is Huffman said, "What we're not going to be evil like Twitter. We're going to let them know." Unfortunately, he gave them 1 month, and the API costs they proposed, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, were 24 cents per thousand hits.
Per thousand calls. Yeah, I think that matches
per
my
calls,
memory.
Yeah.
It was a lot of money. That's a huge amount of money. The number one Reddit app, an app I use and love, because, by the way, we should also mention, Reddit does have iOS and Android apps. They're unusable.
Yeah.
They're awful. I
did not know there were third-party iOS apps on Reddit. Or for Reddit. And so I've been using the official one. And oh my God.
It's awful.
It is not good. Yes.
But Apollo, written by a guy named Christian Selig, is fantastic. And there's others. Reddit is fun. Riff on Android. I use Joey on Android for a long time. There's Narwhal. There is a fairly rich ecosystem of third-party apps. Christian Selig, on a phone call, talking to them, they said 24 cents for 1,000 calls. He did some math. He said, that's going to cost me $20 million a year. To which they said, yeah, and? So?
Better put some ads on there.
Better do something.
Yeah.
Spez is Steve Huffman's handle on Twitter. What he said was, well, just charge your users for that. You know, $5 a user, you're going to be great. It's more complicated than that. He's got grandfathered users because of fees from Apple, for instance, which takes 30% and the credit cards. Mm-hmm. It would not be $5. It wouldn't be, it would, he would actually, he said, he was on Tech News Weekly this week on Thursday, he told Micah and Jason Howell, I would lose 10 cents a user if I charged $5 a month. So, and he reasonably says, I can't charge more than $5 a month. So he says, I'm out of business, end of the month. Now, I'm sure he's made a good living. Apollo was, I think, well funded. He had a lot of users and I paid for it. A lot of people did. Riff also said, yeah, we're going to cut the cord end of the month. We can't pay this. Number of third-party apps said, all right, we're out of business. But this bothered the users. I think one of the problems that Elon and Huffman have is they forget. They think people go to Twitter because of the software. They think people go to Reddit because of the software. People don't go to Twitter and Reddit because of your fabulous software, because of your servers, because of your trust and safety. They go there because of the other people, the content. which is all made
which is made for free.
For free.
By those users.
Reddit's actually more in debt because Reddit uses volunteer mods. Who really put in the time. I mean, I might post once in a while.
They put in the work.
But that's hard work. The mods are upset because a lot of the tools they use the API. And oh, by the way, they prefer the third-party apps anyway. So the mods are upset. So they said, we're going to have a little boycott June 12th through 15th. And about half the, I think it was about half the mods, half the subreddits, the channels on Reddit went dark. Right?
It was a lot.
It was a lot. To which Steve Huffman goes on a very ill-advised publicity tour, gives interviews to The Verge, NPR, NBC, and says the moderators are landed gentry. They are the problem. We're going to make it possible for the users to vote the mods out, and we're going to force these communities to reopen. And that really pissed people off.
Yeah.
My favorite one is r/pix, which decided, so iPhone, for instance, went dark forever. They said, move to Discord. We're going to have a Discord channel. r/pix decided we're only going to post pictures. It's a place where you'd post your pictures. We're only going to post pictures of John Oliver from now on. And it's all John Oliver. All the
Nothing
time.
Nothing else.
What a great protest, by the way.
Yeah. You're using up the servers, the bandwidth, using up server bandwidth to put John Oliver on your subreddit. Very good. Very good use. Very good. But here's the thing. Like, Reddit, this is what Reddit is best at, right? It's like this sort of like...
this is the culture.
Yeah. It's like, this is exactly Reddit culture. I've been on Reddit. I don't even want to say how long I've been on Reddit because it's going to age me like too much. But literally, I've been on Reddit a long time, and like I love Reddit. I love so many of these communities. Like, there are so many of the funniest people I've ever encountered on the internet I've seen on Reddit. Like, some of the funniest stories I've ever read have been on Reddit. And you know, this is exactly the kind of like good chaos Reddit is known for. Like, a lot of, you know, there are some other less good communities that have, you know, kind of moved on or have been sort of shadow banned. But the thing is like, you know, collectively, there is a chaotic good about most of like mainstream Reddit that when harnessed and pointed in a certain direction can be very powerful.
Well, and it's interesting because Steve Huffman, who you would think would understand the culture completely,
you'd think so,
misunderstood how users would react. He sent out a memo to the team saying, A, don't go outside in your Reddit gear because you'll get tomatoes thrown at you. And B, it'll all pass. Don't worry. This is just, yeah, you know, these are they're babies. They're landed gentry. They're going to whine and moan, and everything will be back to normal. Is he right?
No.
I don't think so.
No.
I think so.
I think going back to Leo's comment about how people don't go to Twitter and Reddit for the software is actually a bit of an understatement, given that Reddit and Twitter have famously crap server capacity.
They're terrible.
Remember like, the fail whale.
There's
the two apps that still don't work somehow in 2023. In the era of a multi-public cloud environment, they can get their infra straight. So, no, I think people only come for the community, and people are going to leave and find other options slowly. I mean,
there
Twitter
isn't,
is still
I have to say, I've looked. You know, there's a Fediverse thing called Lemmy. There's K-Bit. But there isn't really anything. There's Discord, I guess. There's nothing like Reddit.
Discord's hard because it's like it's not easily browsable, right? It's like you have to know what you want. Like, when I go and I want to join a community like Club Twit, like I know what I'm looking for and that's what I join. But it's like on Reddit, you can just surf Reddit and find a community that you didn't know existed. You know, it's like maybe you don't go to, you know, maybe you never would have found a community had you not just seen a post surface, a really hot post surface on Reddit. And then you find like this really great community, like Restoration. Restoration is like one of my favorite Reddit communities. Like, I love seeing people restore photos. I find it terribly fascinating. And I would have never found that had it not just popped up on my feed one day because one of the posts was really blowing up. And so I went in there and I'm like, oh my God, I love this subreddit. I'm going to hang out in here. Yes. And so I, you know, joined the subreddit. So the discoverability factor, I think, is really a key thing that makes Reddit different from any of its potential competitors, like a Discord. I think Discord in particular would be the one that would come to mind first.
But well, Reddit, Twitter have the advantage that if you want to know what the zeitgeist is of the internet, you can go mm-hmm. there and you can quickly get a handle on what people are talking about, what people care about.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's hugely, they're both very, very valuable. Furthermore, mm-hmm. Reddit is valuable for a lot of people who, instead of searching Google, they will add site:reddit.com on their Google searches because they get much more useful information.
Get better results,
Google's going to suffer from this. We should also point out, and perhaps this is what got Huffman and the board upset, is that OpenAI was in all probability trained on the entirety of Reddit. They know exactly how much OpenAI sucked from Reddit. And it probably was a huge amount. And they're looking at OpenAI's valuation and then seeing Fidelity cut their valuation by half might have pissed them off. Alex, you don't think it's going to survive this?
Well, I think I was actually going to bring up the AI point, so I'm glad you did. I really do think that we need to figure out some way to receive compensation for work that is ingested into AI products that is then sold to other people. Like, that just seems very reasonable to me. The reason why I don't worry as much about discoverability or the other issues that are very clear when we talk about why Twitter and Reddit are still around is because I don't think there's going to be a one-to-one replacement for them. Right away. But I do think there's a slow poison effect to this, Leo. Like, whenever I'm on Twitter now, I feel like I'm helping Elon make his interest payments.
Yeah.
And now when I'm on Reddit, I feel like I'm helping somebody who tried to union bust unpaid mods. And so it just takes away some of the spark and joy for me. And that means I'm probably going to use it less and less over time. Slow poison. So I think it's... Are Reddit's best days ahead of it? I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who said, yeah, this is the right direction to go in. And I think it's going to take a couple of years to play out. But I wouldn't be surprised if we're past peak Reddit now.
There's also a... poison's a good word because it isn't going to go away any more than Twitter went away. Mm-hmm. But if half the subreddits that I follow went away, I could still go to Reddit and get some of what I got. But maybe I wouldn't even notice, but there's going to be some thinning of the quality. Plus, the people who are going to stick around who are insensitive to what's happening, maybe not the people I want to follow. I want to follow. You talked about Reddit's culture, Ashley. There was a very quirky, unique culture. And I have to think a lot of the people who contribute to that will leave if they haven't already left.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's a lot of moderators who, or, you know, bots, people who build bots. That's another aspect of Reddit that I think a lot of people really appreciate, like regardless of whether it's a super useful bot or a sillier bot. You know, there are people who put in that work even on Reddit. And so it's a real house of cards, because once you start removing people who are conduits for the zeitgeist, then all of a sudden there is no zeitgeist. You can't get that temperature check. And then that's when those people who get the temperature checks on Reddit start using it even less. You know, it's just, it's a real cascading effect. And, you know, you have to appreciate that your users are utilizing your service in order to connect with each other and also create content that other people like. And so to kind of fly in the face of that and ignore it is really, it's like shocking to me as someone who co-founded Reddit. Like you said, Leo, like, it's shocking to me that Spez is so defiant in this. But I think this speaks to that like overall problem. And sorry, my dog's barking at a squirrel outside, if anyone can hear it.
Squirrel!
He's just going absolutely bananas right now. The sun came out for a day and he's like, I've had it with any living creature in this yard. But I think it really speaks to this kind of growth at all costs forever. That's just unsustainable. It's just an unsustainable business model, this like, oh, we must have year over year growth every year in perpetuity. Like, it's just not a thing that's realistic. And, you know, to be able to sit there and call your moderators who work for free, you're calling them landed gentry. I mean, it's just absolutely,
God. So
I mean, it's just so dramatic, first of all. Like, stop it. Like, stop. Sit down.
Yeah. I want to say in the Verge interview that Spez did, he discussed how you know, if Google had had third-party apps, wouldn't have been public, and people could kind of get Google's results in their app but didn't charge for it and use Google's API to kind of suck their search results out, would Google have allowed that? So why should Reddit? And initially, I kind of sat back and was like, oh, okay, that's an interesting argument. But then I realized that the work that makes Reddit great, the company doesn't do, whereas the search results that made Google special when it did go public were actually the company's work. And so to me, there's just a misunderstanding of where the value comes from this company. And I think that that's leading to some poor choices. And this may end up driving enough near-term revenue to go public. And Spez will get feted for that and patted on the shoulder and given his block of money. And fine, capitalism. But, you know, as someone who's been on Reddit now for 14 years, according to my profile I just pulled up, and I'm, as a charter member of what was then called Reddit Gold, I'm disappointed that the site that I spend so much time on is apparently forgetting who it is and who made it worth what it may be worth to the market sometime. It's a bummer. But also, you know, Reddit's been around for a long time. Maybe this it had to go the way of Facebook at some point, right? All ad-based properties eventually decay to the point in which they commit suicide. Google search is a good example.
It's the, as Cory Doctorow called it, the shitification of the internet. It's what happens.
Corey's been doing a lot of great writing lately. We should give him 5 points for that, because he's been really just
been crushing it.
Blunt shotgun to the zeitgeist. I think he's been doing it. I've really appreciated it. He's the right person for the right time.
The right time.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, like him, Casey Newton. Like I'm really enjoying Casey's work as well. Like I think, you know, and also like I'm really enjoying Kara Swisher just not giving an F about anything ever. Like,
she never did.
Like, can I just say something? She never did. She never did. But even more so now, like she just, it's like every minute of every day she becomes more powerful. And it's just really, that's like an exciting thing for me to see on twitter.com. That's like one of the, again, she is a conduit for the zeitgeist. And I love seeing her takes for that reason.
But if you're on the other side of Kara, though, it's tough. Like,
Ever be on the other side of Kara. That's my best advice.
Hear me out, Ashley. But I think I've met Kara like by four or five times. Back when I was much more on like the tech circuit, if you will. Mm-hmm. And like every time we met, she looked at me up with her sunglasses and was like, "Who are you?" And I'm like, "We've met four times." And so she somehow makes you feel about 2 inches tall.
She is a formidable human being. Yes. I'm scared of her, like fully admitted. I'm scared of her, but like in a good way. Like I see her on Twitter and I'm like, I would never want to be in your crosshairs, but also like keep on keeping on.
You know, the point about like what Corey is doing and what Casey are doing to me actually hits me kind of in the heart, because I feel like they are writing about and thinking about the most important things today in like the world of digital. And I feel like my professional niche is sufficiently far from the current like crosshairs that I'm almost like missing the moment based on what I do for a living. I kind of wish I always had more.
That's not, you know, come on. FOMO is an absolute continuous thrum background radiation for anybody in our business. Constantly. Yeah. Constantly.
Yeah. I have JOMO now. I have joy of missing out. I'm glad I'm not.
I know. I mean, look, I was reading that poetry earlier about for Father's Day. I can't read it on the air because it's profane, by Philip Larkin. And I'm thinking, how did I not become a poet?
I know why. I know why, Leo. Why? It's because even you and I will never commit such financial suicide as to pursue poetry.
Yeah, that's true.
Because we were not born with a billionaire parent.
Yeah, there you go.
That's why.
Yeah. All right. Let's. So the prognosis for Reddit, not good. Steve, clearly, do people go crazy? They get to a certain age and they lose their marbles. What happened to Steve? He wrote the thing in Common Lisp.
Everybody wants that. Everybody wants like the bank account of Elon Musk. Everybody wants the Zuckerberg treatment. It's like, it's just, you know, the lure is it's too shiny. It's too exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Money is the root of all evil, I guess.
I mean, curse me with a bit more of it. I mean, I won't say maybe, no.
I know it's true.
Maybe phrase should be adjusted. Not having money is the root of all evil, but wanting more.
The only thing worse than having too much money is not having enough, I think, is the way that I would put that.
That's good.
George Bernard Shaw, ladies and gentlemen.
Like that.
George Bernard Wilhelm.
A.K.A. LBJ, a.k.a. Mark Twain.
Yeah, totally.
We're just going through history today on the show.
Yeah. All I know is the rich are not like you and me. Let us take a break. Ashley Esquetha is here. Great to have you, Ashley. We'll talk about Rowdy Skeleton, your new enterprise, in just a little bit. Alex Wilhelm also here from TechCrunch, the Equity Podcast. And, of course, he writes for TechCrunch. And I read you religiously because that's the only way I can figure out what the hell's going on in the finance world. It's crazy time. It's crazy time. Our show today, I should mention our fine sponsor, brought to you by, it is crazy time out there, so you need Cisco Duo. Duo protects against breaches with a leading access management suite. Man, nowadays, breach is such a problem. Just had a caller on the Ask the Tech Guy show earlier today. Said, oh, yeah, you know, on Thursday, the Louisiana Department of Motor Vehicles announced that almost everybody in Louisiana's information has been stolen by a breach. Like, everything gone. That's why you need, don't let this happen to you, strong, multi-layered defenses and innovative capabilities that allow only legitimate users in, keep the bad actors out. And if suddenly you get the urge... Suddenly you say, you wake up and say, oh, we got to do this now. If you need protection fast, you can be sure Duo is easy and fast to implement. It can quickly enable strong security. And by the way, without impeding your productivity, your employee productivity. In fact, it can improve it. And I'll tell you how. I'll explain this. Duo prevents unauthorized access with multi-layered defenses and modern capabilities that thwart sophisticated malicious access attempts. You need that, right? And even better, because Cisco and Duo are constantly monitoring the threat landscape, it will automatically increase authentication requirements in real time as the risk rises. Now, how does this help high productivity? Because it only requires authentication when needed. So your users aren't going to say, it's harder to get in. No, it's swift, it's easy, but it's also secure. Duo also provides an all-in-one solution for strong multi-factor authentication, for passwordless, that's all the rage these days, single sign-on, and trusted endpoint verification. Duo helps you implement zero trust principles by verifying users and their devices, and that's good for everyone. Start your free trial. Sign up today. cs.co/twit. I love that short URL. That's so good. cs.co/twit for Cisco Duo. They say spell it out. Honestly, I don't know how you could do it without spelling it out. cs.co? I guess I could say that. cs.co/twit for Cisco Duo. It's a great solution. I'm just loving these photos of John Oliver. But it makes me sad because r/iPhone I use all the time. There are a lot of subreddits. And, you know, I feel a little guilty because I probably should have rewarded mod. I don't know. Is there a way to reward mods? You should thank your mod.
You can give gold.
Give gold. I should give more gold. I have lots of gold. Give more gold. Well, speaking of annoying big tech, Google has decided they are going to offload Google domains. I don't know why I'm running this up top, except it's pissing me off. Google domains, which was actually a very good way to buy a domain name. They had 300 TLDs. It wasn't the cheapest, but it was certainly affordable. And now they sold it to Squarespace.
I'm sorry. There's a funny account called like Killed by Google, and all it does is track different products that Google kills off. And I'm pretty sure when this happened, they had the best day ever. They're like, yes, I was right. I think the pitch here, Leah, was focus, but I mean, it seems pretty short-sighted to kill off all the things that built consumer surplus at the company.
9 years long. Look, we have a sponsor, Hover, which is a great domain registrar, and that's what I use.
That's who I use.
Yeah, it's good. It's not like there's a shortage of good domain registrars, but I have to feel for all the people who registered their domain at Google Domains that soon going to be owned by Squarespace.
I'd be so annoyed.
I would be so annoyed.
There will be a transition period. Squarespace takes it all over. 10 million domains hosted on Google Domains, millions of customers. Google said, we're sharpening our focus, sharpening their knives. This is right after, by the way, Google announced the .zip TLD, which is a security nightmare. So this was like their last hurrah. Okay, we're going to introduce a TLD that could really hack your computer, and then we're going to sell the business. Goodbye.
They did MOV, too, .mov, which also is like, what?
Oh.
Why?
Steve Gibson.
Why don't you just buy .pdf?
Yeah, like, there you go.
It's like, just, I don't, like, oh, yes, you can find me at ashleyesqueda.pdf. Like, what?
Oh, my God.
I mean, is that the only way it could have been worse is if they had also...
Well, .zip's pretty bad.
.pdf.
Because, in fact, Steve covered this on Security Now last week. You know, you put a link on a in an email or a website that's, you know, download.zip or whatever. It goes to a website, downloads in the background a malicious file. I mean, it's a terrible idea. Come see our website. Well, Squarespace now wants .zip and .move as well.
Take my advice, Squarespace. Discontinue those immediately.
I don't know how... What is Google feels like it's shredding before our very eyes.
No, like, this is like pretty classic Google stuff. I mean, they've been launching initiatives and then shutting them down since time immemorial.
Yeah, look at them all. Killed
I'd
by
be
Google.
Concerned if they weren't killing things. That's when I get scared for Google, when there's nothing left to take.
Stadia, I felt bad for, but, you know, I understood that I wasn't going anywhere.
Good technology. Just I think that it was just so ambitious. They wanted to make their own like kind of console platform. And I'd like they should have just sold it. Should have licensed the technology because that's where it is.
Maybe they tried to and Squarespace didn't want it. I don't know.
Ugh, probably. You're probably right.
Jeez. Bam.
Squarespace only has so much money, guys. Yeah. Come on.
I can't believe they bought Google Domains. Like, that was the best you could do. I mean, look, nothing wrong with Squarespace, but they're a web design, you know, website company. They're not. And incidentally, for years I've said to people, do not get your domain from the same people who do your website. Yeah, that's convenient, but it's a bad idea. You should have it somewhere else, like Hover.
Well, and wasn't there a time where like you couldn't, maybe I'm mixing up services, but there was a point where you couldn't import a domain to Squarespace. Like you had to buy it through
maybe.
Squarespace.
I wouldn't be surprised.
If you wanted to build a site, like it was like, if you wanted to use a domain, you had to do it through them, maybe. Which means if you had already registered a website, forget it. Like it just didn't.
Well, I'm sure they changed that. That's a bad idea.
Or if they haven't already, now they can.
There is a larger question, though. I mean, yes, of course, Google should kill stuff that doesn't make money or whatever. Every company should do that. But at some point, doesn't it hurt you? Like people are you know, and then now Google comes up with some shiny new thing. I'm really going to think twice before I adopt anything Google comes up with, right?
Oh, I'll adopt nothing that they come up with. I mean, I don't think the follow through.
Yeah, I mean think about Gmail is like one of the only things I use, and Drive. That's like it.
Yeah, but think about how Google really did well in the past. They launched Google Search, which was amazing, very ad light. They made a bunch of money, enormous amounts of consumer surplus there. Gmail came out, have a gigabyte of storage, changed the way we think about the internet. They made Chrome. Here's a lightweight browser that's super fast. And since then, they have Inshitified, to use Corey's language, search. Gmail has stagnated to the point of being vetted. And everything else they've done has slowly kind of decayed. I mean, it's a company that appears to be more run by consultants than technologists. And it answers to Wall Street more than users. And I think that it just shows top to bottom. It's a disappointment, but nothing else they've built really became big enough.
It's kind of a disease that's everywhere now, endemic in the technology business.
It's just less, it's so much less about users and it's more about investors, right? It's just shareholders and that's it. Like that's really the only thing, you know. So like there a lot of companies feel like right now that, you know, and over time, like last few years especially, it just feels like there is such a devaluation of the user experience in favor of like just whatever boosts shareholder income. I mean, even in, and this is not even like exclusive to tech, this is like happening in Hollywood as well with the writer's strike and everything that's going on there. And, you know, these really big corporations buying up studios and stuff and deciding that, you know, oh, well, we're going to issue creatives in favor of our shareholders. And it's like, oh, we're just going to take a big tax write off on, you know, Space Ghost was fully pulled off of Max this last week.
Oh,
like Space Ghost Coast to Coast fully pulled off Max. And it's like, because they don't want to pay royalties on it and they just want to take a big write off on it. And so it's like, I assume that they say, okay, well, this is a show that, like, you know, probably not a ton of people rewatch, but also it's enough that, you know, just the cost of them keeping it online is enough that, you know, and it's an older show, so probably the residuals are a little bit better. And so it's like, to keep that, you know, in place, it's like it didn't make sense for shareholders, but not for people who are using the service. So it, that is a real bummer, and it's just really prevalent right now. It does feel like it's everywhere.
Here's
I think part of the reason why that's happening is because we're pretty far after the last technology generation shift.
Yeah,
right? That's whenever there's a new platform or a new major method of building stuff, new stuff comes out, it really changes the game, makes a lot of money, and it hasn't been so finely optimized for net income that there's a lot of consumer surplus left. And then, you know, this far into the last cycle,
watch as OpenAI speed runs the enshittification cycle. Because they're going to go right through it. Let me read you. This is from Corey's post, TikTok's enshittification. This is how platforms die. First, they are good to their users. Reddit, Google. Then they abuse their users to make things better for their business customers. Finally, they abuse those business customers to claw back all the value from themselves. Then they die.
That's a pretty perfect life cycle.
Yeah.
That's a pretty perfect life cycle image.
He says, I call this enshittification, and it is a seemingly inevitable consequence arising from the combination of the ease of changing how a platform allocates value, combined with the nature of a two-sided market where a platform sits between buyers and sellers. In the case of Reddit, the readers in the posters, holding each hostage to the other, raking off an ever larger share of the value that passes between them. Happened at TikTok, happened at Twitter, it's happening at Reddit. He uses Amazon.
Amazon is a great example.
Yeah.
Great example.
When a platform starts, it needs users, so it makes itself valuable to users, often selling below cost, right? Think of Amazon. For many years, it operated at a loss, using its access to the capital markets to subsidize everything you bought. They kept going back to raise more money. And when VC said no more money, they started borrowing. It sold goods below cost and shipped them below cost. It operated a clean and useful search. If you search for a product, Amazon tried its damnedest to put it at the top of the search results. That was a hell of a good deal for Amazon customers, Corey writes. Lots of us piled in, and lots of brick and mortar retailers withered and died, making it hard to go elsewhere. But then that tempted in lots of business customers, marketplace sellers who turned Amazon into the everything store it promised from the beginning. As these sellers piled in, Amazon shifted to subsidizing suppliers. Kindle and Audible creators got generous packages. Marketplace sellers reached huge audiences. Amazon took low commissions for them. Made it harder for shoppers to find anything anywhere except Amazon. But it also meant more sellers had to be on Amazon. That's when Amazon started to harvest the surplus from its business customers and send it to Amazon shareholders. Today, marketplace sellers are handing 45% of the sale price to Amazon in fees. 45%. The company's $31 billion advertising program, I put that in scare quotes, is really a payola scheme that pits sellers against each other. Surpluses are first directed to users, then once they're locked in, surpluses go to suppliers, then once they're locked in, the surplus is handed to shareholders, and the platform becomes a useless pile of poop.
Yeah.
It's effectively the dentist system from It's Always Sunny, but for apps.
Tell me that, because I don't watch that show.
Okay. So in It's Always Sunny, in the fifth season, there is this like very classic, famous episode called The Dentist. It's... The dentist system.
I will watch this. Okay.
Introduces this introduces this thing called the Dennis system. And Dennis in It's Always Sunny, if you're not familiar with his character, is basically a sociopath and borderline psychopath. There's a subreddit about it, I'm sure. And so the Dennis system is his system to get women to sleep with him. And so he's like, the Dennis system is D, demonstrate value,
yeah.
E, engage physically,
yeah.
N, nurture dependence, N, neglect emotionally, then inspire hope, and then separate entirely. And it's like, every time I think about technology, I'm like, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia literally inspired this somehow. Like, I don't know how it happened, but the Dennis system predicted our current situation.
Oh my God. I've been using that system for years. I didn't even know there was a name. Yeah.
No, it's the Dennis system. It's from 2009. Like, this is an episode that aired a long time. It's such a funny, God, this show is so funny.
Is it still good?
It's the Dennis system.
It's still good.
How is it still good?
Yeah.
It's still good. There are some they still manage to have at least one like absolute banger episode every season that is just like an instant classic. And I think
15 years they've been doing this. It's amazing.
Long time. Yeah. And they've had how many seasons?
16 seasons.
I mean, it's just, and it's a timeless show. That's the great thing about it. It's like, it's a timeless show.
Because Max will kill it as soon as they're not making any money on it, right?
Why do we have to call it Max? I can't.
Where does that? FX ends up on Hulu, but isn't Hulu about to be sold?
Hulu's gonna spin down now because Disney, right? Because Disney is like, they're, I think it's Comcast is selling its last. They held like 10%, and then they're finally letting that go.
And then at that point, what, Disney Plus and Hulu become the same, or?
Yeah, they'll make one big app, and I'm sure. Because the thing is like, so it doesn't suit them to really have two separate apps like that, especially now that they've implemented parental controls and R-rated content on Disney Plus, which for a while they didn't. They were, you know, separation of adults and kids content. But now they're like, well, now we have, you know, some adult content. You have gates and, you know, parental controls and stuff. So now we're just going to merge them.
What would they call it? Since there's Max, they should call it Mini.
Mini,
like Minnie Mouse.
I'm pretty sure with Disney's the mini ears, find you for that.
Should have the ears and the
Disney
bow,
Mini.
Like right there.
Yeah.
Mini,
yeah.
Disney Mini. You can either subscribe to Mini or Max.
Or Max.
Which one?
Get the one you like. This streaming thing is another example of insuretification, I think. It's a mess.
I think also the studio system in general is like a very complicated and specific business model that often does not work with people who are traditionally used to making money in in regular VC and like that startup space, like and Silicon Valley. And so now that all of these Silicon Valley technology executives are kind of like getting their hands into the studio system, it's kind of a mess. It's like lifting up a rug and finding like a disaster and being like, oh my God, this is really bad. How can we undo this? And it's not, I don't know that anybody's right in it, but it's just like, it definitely is like the studios have done it their way for a really long time. And there's a very specific way that their finances are structured. And this is like flies directly in the face. It's like in direct opposition with like how traditional like startups and corporations make money and report them on taxes and stuff. So that's why you're now just seeing all of these like tax write-offs, like stuff leaving services as a big tax write-off that'll never get seen again and stuff. It's because now they're having more traditional money and shareholder and, you know, investors get involved in the studio system and they're demanding that the returns be done, quote unquote, properly, which the studio system never really did it that way.
I was reading, there's a new Indiana Jones movie. The last Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm sure they'll have more, but the last one with Harrison Ford. Mm-hmm. And I was reading a review and somebody in the review pointed me to the original Indiana Jones review in The New Yorker by Pauline Kael. And it was very interesting. When was that? When did that come out? It was 1989, Indiana Jones. That's the third one.
No, that's a later one. Yeah. That was The Last Crusade, I think.
She said... Oh, here it is. The Temples of Doom.
Because I think Temple of Doom was 83. I think it was the year. The second one, that was the year I was born, 83. Aww. So I think there was an Indiana Jones
that
year.
It was a very good year.
It was Return of the Jedi and Indiana Jones, so people were just like really hot on Harrison Ford. That was the year of Harrison Ford in 83.
Isn't that also the year Metallica dropped and Ride the Lightning? Excellent. Oof,
maybe.
Pauline Kael in 1981.
84, Ride the Lightning.
In 1981, wrote her review of the first Indiana Jones. The title is Whipped.
Love this.
And this is in 81. Insights. Remember, this is what, 40-some years ago, 42 years ago. The marketing executives are the new high priests of the movie business.
Wow.
Basically, she said, and this is 40 years ago, movies are now made because the marketing department says, yeah, we can sell that. And she predicted that it would all be comic book movies, superhero movies, and horror movies, basically. Comic strip pulp or slobby horror, she said, is the future of the movie business. She wasn't wrong.
No. Also, do you know how excellent that headline was for that article? Do you know how poorly that would have done in SEO terms? What have we lost?
Yeah, you
because of SEO.
No, that's right. Yeah. You couldn't have a one-word review as clever as it is. No.
I try this all the time. I try to make clever headlines, and then my team just deletes them and sends me over a couple of options that people want to
find. Well, and to prove this, I was searching for this review, and I came up with the later ones because they had better SEO. It took me a while to get the Whipped.
Whipped.
So this has been going on forever, right?
I just don't understand the staying power of it. Like, she was right that it became essentially comic books turned into films. But like, didn't we all lose interest like 10 years ago? Like, there's a new Flash movie. And I know this because there's some controversy with one person on the cast.
Well, also, it's supposed to be a horrible movie. Have you seen it?
Leo? The Flash? The 15th Flash movie isn't good? I'm blown away. I thought it was going to be the new freaking Shakespeare. I thought this was going to break new ground in the American zeitgeist of what it means to be alive. Of course it's crap. It's The Flash.
And you know how we know it's crap? Because Variety says The Flash disappoints with a $55 million debut. That's how we know it's bad. Couldn't market that one, I guess.
If only somebody, a superhero, could go back in time, could use their superpowers, change history.
Spin the world backwards, maybe. That might work.
Superman, I think a big part of it is, I mean, merchandising, like, doesn't, I mean, it's just a big machine, right? It's like, you know, I think merchandising, like, doesn't hurt, right? And it's like, and also there are new people discovering that stuff every day.
Yeah.
You're going to find this out, Alex. One day your kid's going to be like, I like Super Kitties. Oh. And you're like, what is that?
Oh.
And then you watch it and you're like, this is actually like pretty good. But also like, now I have to buy you those toys.
Do you have to watch children's TV now, Ashley?
I've watched so much children's TV that I feel qualified to say that so much of it is actually very good.
Okay.
There's some really good kids' TV out there. And also, so there is some of it that is very clearly very bad. And I'm sure the companies making those, the executives at the studios making those shows would love nothing more than to ask Bard or ChatGPT to write those episodes because
why not?
They just don't care. They don't care.
Baby Shark could be written by any proficient AI in the world.
Fortunately, my kid, like, I am very hashtag blessed. My kid is not into that song, and we never played. He listens to regular music, so it's like,
yeah, I figure your kid's gonna be pretty hip.
He likes the Beastie Boys. Oh. He's like, his favorite song, he loves Intergalactic. That's his favorite song right now.
My third grade basketball team, that was our warm-up song.
Wow.
That's a good one.
Wow.
Got me really into Beastie
Boys. That's a hype song.
Totally a hype song. It's fantastic. But I want to go back to the technology companies getting involved in the studio game and trying to do films and stuff.
I would love to hear from you about this.
Amazing how the quality is so variable. Because do you remember when Amazon dropped their Lord of the Rings universe thing?
Uh-huh. And the Rings of Power.
Yeah. And like,
I spent a lot of money on that, by the way.
Dweeb.
Yeah, a lot of money.
Yeah, a lot of money.
Bezos really wanted a Game of Thrones.
Yep.
Bad. And then I'm watching Apple TV Plus Max's new show Silo, which is based on a series of novels I have somewhere on the shelf over here. And Wool. It's actually
right.
Wool. Yeah. Wool.
We're interviewing the author of Wool on in our club. In a cup. Yeah.
Really? Alex is like, how do I get in on this?
No, I
got to join club.
June 29th.
Discord.
Hugh Howey.
Wow.
June 29th. You're in the club.
I'm in the club. It's on one of my Discord accounts. I got to show up to that because that show is good.
Yeah.
And
apparently follows the novels pretty closely, right?
It does. And so there's an enormous quality gap that seems to play out in these tech companies trying to get into the media game. But I think fundamentally they won't be good at it over a long period of time because art doesn't scale the way technology does. And I don't think the people who do accounting will ever actually understand that.
Actually, I wish I had. We're going to take a break. We have to. And then I want to talk about the fact that Google's entire financial model might be under threat by the EU.
Oh, yeah.
which is a good story. But there were a couple of Pauline Kael quotes from this whipped review that I wanted to read to you because I thought they were so. I should have marked them. One is, I think he said George Lucas. She said George Lucas is basically selling toys. That's really what his job is. Oh crud! Oh well. There were some really awesome quotes in here. Anyway, are you going to go see the new Indiana Jones and the worst name ever, The Dial of Death?
You know,
is it the Dial of Death or is it the Dial of Destiny?
Dial of Destiny. It's a dial is all I know.
A dial.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather watch Nicolas Cage steal the Constitution again than watch another Indiana Jones movie that's literally spun up to try to do the nostalgia grift on my generation.
I'll watch it. I love pulp. So I love a good pulp adventure. And I also really love Phoebe Waller-Bridge. So I'll totally watch it.
Oh,
she's working on the new Tomb Raider, too, which Amazon also now is like got their hands on.
Kael writes, there's nothing at stake in Raiders. No revelation, no surge of feeling at the end. The thrills are fully consumed while you're seeing this movie. And it's totally over when it's over. It's a workout. You feel as if you'd been to the desert digs. At the end, your mind is blank. Yet you're parched. You're puffing hard. You want relief.
Look, man, I really love chicken McNuggets. They're not healthy for me. I feel nothing as soon as the high of eating them wears off. Like I don't necessarily feel good about myself, but also I had a really good time while it was happening, and that's what matters.
All right. I don't want to harsh your mellow, though. You're absolutely right. Absolutely.
Let me have my pulp, Leo. Let me have my pulp adventures.
Keep your pulp. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more with our fabulous panel, and we are going to talk gaming. We had a very, very good discussion before the show, and I kind of want to ask you about Diablo 4. We're all three of us playing it and other games. And I'm sure, Alex, you have some sort of quirky world-building game that you can't stop playing. And you got me into, what was it, Faithless Frontiers? Endless Frontiers?
Farthest Frontier.
Farthest Frontiers. Actually, I liked Age of Empires, so it fits in with what, you know, I like that style gaming. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a bit. But first, speaking of streaming, let's talk about ExpressVPN. It is not uncommon these days to spend over $100 a month on streaming services. Just look at your bill. I bet you do. Netflix and Disney Plus and Prime. And you can save a little bit by using ExpressVPN. See, it turns out Netflix has, as an example, many more shows than you've seen on U.S. Netflix. You don't see them because it depends on what country you're in. So what you see on Netflix here, for instance, completely different to Netflix Italy or Netflix South Korea. Netflix is all over the place. Japan, England. Well, this is one of many reasons you should use ExpressVPN. It's easy to change your online location. ExpressVPN has over 90 countries to choose from. So if you've got some interesting tastes in TV, you just switch to another country. You want to see South Korea Netflix? Believe me, it's got some great stuff there. Are you like anime? Netflix Japan. It's heaven, baby. Right now, you can watch all of Downton Abbey on Canadian Netflix. With ExpressVPN, you just tap one button, change it to Canada, refresh the page. Boom, there you are. You don't have to pay extra. ExpressVPN invests in the speed of its servers. HD video, no problem. You not only can put it on your iPhone, your Android, your Mac, your PC, your Linux. You can also put it on your router. They sell some really good routers. The routers they sell are excellent quality. Or you could put it on an on some existing routers. Protect the whole house, and I guarantee you, no one will complain. They won't know because ExpressVPN doesn't slow you down. They're also great for privacy because when you emerge on the public internet, you don't emerge as yourself. You emerge with an ExpressVPN IP address. So people don't, you just don't have to worry about being tracked. You're not going to be. And of course, for security, ExpressVPN's the best. You can even get discounts on ExpressVPN. If you buy Netflix in Argentina, it's less. ExpressVPN, less than $7 a month for the best VPN service out there. Yes, your privacy is absolutely guaranteed at ExpressVPN. There was a great article on Bleeping Computer about how they run their servers. It was quite impressive. They go the extra mile. Yes, of course, they don't do any logging. They say that in their privacy policy. They're independently audited, so we know that's true. But listen to what they do to make sure that nothing will be preserved from your visit. They run a special custom Debian distro on all their servers that wipes the drive every time they reboot every day. Wipes the drive. Nothing's left. Plus, when you spin up your ExpressVPN server, it's a technology they wrote called Trusted Server, runs in RAM sandboxed, can't write to the hard drive. The minute you close it, it disappears, and so does every trace of your visit. It's the little things like that that make such a difference to me. It's why I use ExpressVPN. It's no-brainer if you want to get way more shows, save money, go to expressvpn.com/twit. And please use our special link so you get 3 extra months free with a 1-year package and so that they know you saw it here. ExpressVPN.com/twit. ExpressVPN.com/twit. It's the only VPN I recommend and use. ExpressVPN.com/twit. Google. I don't know if this is trouble for Google or not. The EU is getting more and more aggressive with American big tech companies. Now the EU says Google's online advertising practices violate antitrust laws. They filed new charges against Google. And remember, the EU can charge huge fines. I think it's up to 4% of global revenues. The case was brought by the European Commission. It's the fourth time Google's been charged with violating antitrust, and has in the past cost them significant amounts of money. They were accused of abusing a monopoly over their online technology back in January. Britain's antitrust, by the U.S. Department of Justice, Britain's antitrust authorities also been investigating their advertising practices. Most of Google's revenue, almost all of it, surprisingly, does not come from Google domains. It comes from
wow, I'm shocked, Leo.
Shocking.
What?
It comes from advertising. Margaret Vestager, the executive vice president of the European Commission, said Google is present at almost all levels of the so-called ad tech supply chain. Our preliminary concern is that Google may have used its market position to favor its own intermediation services. They both buy and sell. They have both sides of the transaction. Which is, yeah, I think that's probably kind of not okay. But it's how they do business. Alex, what's the remedy? Will Google have to sell off DoubleClick?
So I pulled up the European Union statement on this, and I just found this to be really funny. It's about remedies, so hear me out. The Commission preliminarily finds that in this case, a behavioral remedy is likely to be ineffective to prevent the risk that Google continues such self-preferencing conducts or engages in new ones. So that limits what they can do to some pretty harsh things if they do find Google to actually be infringing Article 102 of the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union.
Typically, when this kind of thing happens with the DOJ, the FTC, the EU, a company will say, all right, well, let's make a deal. I will do this or that. I'll sell off Instagram, or I will give a discount. They try to find a way out of it. Microsoft famously said, we'll make a deal with the PlayStation that for 10 years we won't do an exclusive on Call of Duty, that kind of thing. Those are the behavioral remedies. They're saying they won't accept that?
They're saying it probably won't work because Google won't actually stop being bad.
Well, that's probably true.
I got to say, I mean, it's funny to see it so bluntly put in kind of like diplomatic speak, if you will. But I reread their complaints and it seems a little bit cut and dry. It's kind of, I know Google has a different opinion about this and a lot of people that I know work there, so I hope they're okay. But the EU is an enormous economic bloc and can throw around its weight, and Google cannot afford to not operate there because that would put an enormous chunk of the global GDP outside of its reach. So I don't know where this is going to go. Obviously, Google will fight this with an entire army of lawyers and lobbyists. So it's far from like guaranteed. But Leo, could we be working towards an environment in which Google gets forced to break up?
I think that's, is that what they're talking about?
So I mean, I don't see another way around it.
It takes a while. So Google has been fined billions of dollars by the EU, all of which currently being appealed. So they haven't paid a penny yet, including Android antitrust. Remember the shopping service antitrust? They, you know, there have been a number of fines levied, all of which are held up by appeal. Golly.
It's shocking to me because it took this long almost to get here. It isn't like these technology companies are doing stuff that's brand new to their business model. In fact, the EU's statement says, you know, since at least 2014, Google has been doing these things we don't agree with. And I'm like, cool, you know, that is a decade ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of the Coinbase SEC fracas right now is because Coinbase is occupying a greater number of places in the kind of trading stack, if you will. And Coinbase is like, well, we've always done that. And the SEC is saying, well, that doesn't mean it was okay. It just means we're now, you know, tapping your wrist for it.
Yeah. Coinbase's defense was, well, what did they, the government said, well, you can pay taxes on that, right? Or something like that. And they said, well, doesn't that mean what we're doing is legal? No, it just means you can pay taxes on it.
You can always pay taxes on things. It doesn't mean that
it's not a seal of approval. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's interesting to see regulation catch up with certain business models that have worked in the technology space, that have been incredibly lucrative over a long period of time. And then tech people are acting all surprised with both hands in the cookie jar that they control both of. In this case, I think we all kind of agree that Google might be slightly more powerful in the online advertising world than is good for the internet.
It's killing us between Google and Spotify and Facebook and Amazon and Microsoft, you know, podcast ads are dwindling rapidly.
I know. My podcast is currently unsponsored, so
yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
It makes me sad. I'm like, I hate doing ads because I'm not good at them like Leo is, but when I don't have one, I'm like, oh.
Well, you know you're doing
one
it for
day I'm
free.
Gonna become.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're, mm-hmm. You're the Google domains of TechCrunch is what you're saying.
No, I'm not being sold for for nine figures. I'm currently That's sucking resources point. Down for production That's and, you know.
Point. Yeah. It's
for the record, I can in fact be sold for nine figures.
Oh,
me too.
Know that out there.
Me too. Oh,
no
yeah.
One has offered.
Nine figures? That seems all right.
Spotify.
I'll go on Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
And debate vaccines.
Spotify,
yeah, yeah.
If you want me to say COVID's good, vaccine's bad, I'll be glad to. Just give me $100 million. It's no problem. No problem.
Yeah, I'll do it for $99 million.
$99 million.
I'll go and buy seven figures right there.
I don't know. It's right there. Drop it from 8 to 7. It'll be fine.
On the antitrust thing, though, I do think there will come a time in the next half to full decade in which we have to take a pretty hard look at some of these major tech companies and say, enough. I was pretty opposed to the Activision, Blizzard, Microsoft deal. Because,
are you?
Yes.
Why?
Because, of course, it's anti-competitive. They're not spending that amount of money to not generate some sort of edge.
Right.
They're not buying it altruistically. They're not buying it for fun. They're not buying it just because it's a lunch.
Are you saying it's a profit deal?
I'm trying to say, Leo, that a company that has lived as long as Microsoft has and has accreted trillions of dollars in value knows how to make money.
Yeah.
And I don't think we should allow them to purchase major assets that could give it increased market leverage.
Well, it looks like it's down to you and the UK. We'll see. We'll see.
It's down to me, Lena Khan, and the UK.
Actually, the FTC is moving ahead, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, that was the last news item in that particular saga.
Yeah.
But Google is enormously powerful and getting larger. Microsoft is the same. Apple, to a similar degree. Meta is kind of taking care of itself, if you will, which is interesting to
watch.
Well,
that's one of the arguments, is that won't these companies all in the end suffer? You know, nothing succeeds forever. They're not going to grow infinitely.
at some point, times will change and there'll be another company to come along, right?
Maybe. That might be the case, but it doesn't actually mean that the harm during the period of incumbency isn't real just because it'll eventually end. Right. I don't think eventual death is enough to say that a crime is not worth noting along the way, to make an analogy, if you will. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to have to decide as an American society. I mean, sure, the EU is involved in this case, but I think here in the States, because the biggest technology companies that are active around the world really are American, right? Mm-hmm. Chinese companies tend to be limited to that geography to a large degree. And so we're going to have to make a decision about how we treat these companies. Do they get to be nation states that are, you know, essentially beholden to nobody but themselves? Or should we make them smaller and more competitive? I mean, I'm a capitalist, but I really think the latter makes more sense than letting them grow forever. Sorry.
No, Microsoft. I just feel like this is a really tough one because there's so much benefit. Well, let's talk about Apple's Vision Pro. No garage entrepreneur could have created that. It took a company willing to sink tens of billions of dollars, thousands of man hours, manpower, you know, humans, into a product that nobody apparently wants to buy at this point. You know, it's a big risk, but only a big company like
I know,
Apple
me and Alex are like, we want to buy it. Yeah, we want to buy it.
I'm pitching the wife already to allocate budget for my dumb
$3,500
nerd helmet. We've already agreed. We literally have already agreed to a splitting of an AVP. I want it.
Good.
I want. Well, look, this is as close as I'm getting right now, Leo. Like this.
That's
is
pretty
it.
Good.
This
what is
all
that?
I got.
Did you steal
this
that from the Daft Punk guys? Did you break their helmet?
I did. It's just a sun visor that I wear by the pool. This
no.
is all I have.
Do you really wear that?
Hell yeah, it's great. I don't have any. I don't get any nose
giant,
bumps.
You have a giant, like white
privacy
swath
screen
across your face.
That's a don't. That's called a don't talk to me screen. That's called a don't talk to me. Don't
she
perceive
might be
me.
An alien.
Leave me alone.
For those
I want to be
you
by
just
the pool
listening,
without discussion.
It is a mirrored shade that is the size. It goes from her forehead to the bottom of her nose.
It's a motorcycle visor. It's the front of a visor, but it's just that, and then it has a soft thing on the
no helmet. Left.
Yeah, no helmet.
But
helmetless
to Leo's
visor.
Point,
but only
it takes a lot of money
so,
to make the Vision Pro.
Yeah,
it
only
does,
you,
it
only
does.
Apple could do that. Nobody's gonna, you know, I mean, admittedly, Palmer Luckey did a Kickstarter to create the Oculus Rift, but there is a big gulf between the Oculus Rift and the Vision Pro.
Right, but at the end of the day, I mean, I think that it's. There will always be those scenarios, and that shouldn't mean that these corporations get to suck all the oxygen out of the room and snap up. You know, I look at Facebook as a really good example of, like, I think of all of the startups that Facebook has eaten because it felt threatened or just copied, like just straight up stole their homework and copied directly from and put other companies out of business. And it's just like, none of those companies are being given a chance unless they have a CEO who is very, like, specifically opposed to being acquired. And even then, it takes a tremendous and skilled, a series of events that have to happen in order for them to even get, not even like close to, but just get any kind of success when you're fighting against companies like, you know, the former FANG companies.
I also want to say that you don't have to start with the Apple Vision Pro, right? You could make something that was simpler and build a company and then make more advanced hardware as you go. So I think Apple is certainly coming out of the gate with something that makes me as a technology nerd, as a fan of gadgets and someone who bought the original Zune. You know, like, I like to buy stuff. Let's go. And I'm totally here for it. But I don't think we would end up in a world in which that stuff isn't possible if we had technology companies that were smaller.
Sure.
In fact, I would say it's more likely to happen.
More likely, yeah.
Right. Because there's more internal competition at these companies. And I think it would make for better companies, just smaller ones.
Instead of one Vision Pro, you might get 10 unique takes on this category or something like that.
It's why Plays for sure beat iPod. And if you don't get that joke and why it's sarcastic, well, congratulations on not being a nerd back in the day.
Because phones were like this too, right? Like for a really long time, we didn't see any variation in phones, like cell phone. We had a lot at the beginning.
And we're not seeing any at all.
Phones are so weird and different. Yeah. And now there's, it's like, it's a slab. That's it. And like, we sort of have.
For the folding.
Like
flip,
we have the folding phone, which is an interesting new category. But, you know, I think that there's just, you know, those smaller companies who might have been willing to take a risk or have the ability to do such a thing, like those just aren't really around anymore. Like, it's
What if Google just disappeared from the face of the earth tomorrow?
Man, wouldn't that be so weird?
Would we be okay?
Yeah. No. I'd be really mad about my Gmail account.
Well, the entire technology world runs on G Suite, right?
Yeah.
And then also Google Cloud is an enormous business now. It powers a big chunk of the internet. It's kind of like if we deleted AWS, we would not be okay. Lost the ability to have a terrible consumer shopping experience on Amazon, I would be fine. But I do worry about the infra that these companies run.
What if I said, okay, in a week, Google's going to disappear. Quick, move Gmail to whatever, Outlook. Move your cloud to Azure or AWS. You know, if I gave you some
time.
But
do those other competitors have the infrastructure to support massive chunk of the internet to come to them in a week? Like, I don't know.
But I mean, argument. I would say that what we need to have is more public clouds versus just one or two or three. Like, yes, Azure, AWS, and Google Cloud are fantastic for what they do. But wouldn't it be cool if there were five versus three?
Yeah,
or 10.
Yeah.
Like, remember when Amazon used to cut prices on AWS like all the time, and it was awesome. And then they got a bunch of competition, and then it became the sole driver of operating income at Amazon. So now they don't.
In some ways, the solution to insurtification is competition.
Yes.
So that, so if your company's decided to prioritize making money over your interests, then go to an equivalent company.
Yeah.
You're not stuck. Exactly.
But right now, we don't have that.
You are stuck.
There are a lot of places where there isn't an alternative.
Right.
And we're just trapped in these ecosystems where, like, Twitter is a really good example. I think a lot of people in my timeline wish there was an alternative that was, you know, even half of what, you know, off what they get, what they used to get on Twitter. Like, they want out, but there is no real alternative. And it's very similar with a lot of older people who still use Facebook. There's like, you know, it's just like, what's the alternative for them when they get so much of their life updates and group invites and, you know, all of that stuff? Like, they get all that stuff from that ecosystem. And it's like, it's very hard to break people out of an ecosystem when they are so reliant on it. That it becomes a massive part of their, you know, user experience when they pick up their phone.
Mm. I think also just having two OSs for phones is not enough. And I think that tying one of them to the largest ad stack on the internet is not so great either.
Yeah.
Just my personal opinion.
Yeah.
So I think if we applied a bit of Corey to a bit of this world, it would be okay. But to be clear, we're not going to do this, right? It would require a shift in Congress and a shift in how we approach antitrust regulation and a change in the power between the American government and these companies. Currently, the only thing Microsoft's not allowed to do is buy the makers of StarCraft. They've already bought a lot of other stuff. So my argument here is certainly on the losing side. And I'm not trying to...
StarCraft? That's the game you're going to focus on?
Well, you know what I don't play is Call of Duty because I didn't drink a lot of Bush Light in college. So.
Oh, I'm telling Paul Thurrott you said that.
Actually, oh, Paul doesn't like me already.
Paul actually, believe it or not, just went through a withdrawal, 3-month withdrawal. He stopped playing Call of Duty to like.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Bush Light.
Bush Light. Well, it might have gone along with the Bush Light. I don't know. Maybe I'll have to ask.
Maybe,
might have given
maybe
him
together.
A
maybe they all right. Hand in hand.
The reason why I picked StarCraft is Blizzard to me is Warcraft 3 and StarCraft.
No, you're right.
And the other game that we talked about before the show. But StarCraft and StarCraft 2 will always have a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
And I will go down on that ship. So
before we talk about any Blizzard Activision, so I have a duty to alert people that my husband works for Activision and my brother works at Blizzard.
Wow.
So, yeah.
It's all in the family.
Person ever.
I cannot comment. I don't like, I mean, I've talked about it on Twitter. So like I, I don't.
What does your husband do?
I don't have any official comments.
What does he do at Activision?
Comments.
Is he a designer? Is he a lawyer? What is
no,
this?
He's a he does logistics for all of their esports. So
oh,
he does.
Cool.
He makes sure that all of the basically like my husband is one of the linchpins that ensures all items, products, jerseys, computers, webcam, like literally all equipment gets to its destination and the events happen the way they're supposed
so
to.
So what's the so prognosis that's for esports? Because I've thought for a long time that's the next big thing, and then all of a sudden it seems to be collapsing in on itself.
Esports is really hard. I think a lot of people saw what was happening in South Korea and really got excited in you know StarCraft and you know League of Legends, and a lot of that in South Korea is just, you know, there's a very different culture around esports. And you know, for me, like, kind of non-exclusive to what's Activision or Blizzard, just esports in general, I think one of the hardest things is that, you know, we don't really have, I've always wondered why we don't have home teams that have like arenas like that. We don't have a place for fans to go to. It's always like, oh, they're going to play like in LA. It's like, oh, they'll play at, you know, Microsoft Theater, or they'll play here or whatever. But it's like there should be like a location that is the team's stadium, as it were. It doesn't have to be huge. And that's the place where fans can come for signings, and they can come for, you know, press events, and they can sell merch there, and they can meet the players and like learn about them more. And one of the things we have in other sports that we, you know, that are very niche in esports, I think to a degree, is superstars that are known outside of the sport itself. So it's like, a lot of people know a lot of football, NFL players, even though they never have watched a football game. Like, oh, I've seen Michael Strahan on live
they're
with Kelly and Michael. It's like they're celebrities. And the thing is I think that there's a real difficulty in, one, a lot of these kids are kids. They're 18 and they are, you know, they're not great at talking on camera. They're not good at reading a teleprompter. They're not good at being a spokesperson. They're just used to being at their desk and streaming, and they're really good at it. Like, they're really good at it, but that doesn't necessarily translate to a successful career as a celebrity or a personality, a bigger personality. And I think really there's kind of a disconnect there between, like, you have to kind of create a superstar in some ways, but also it's that lightning in a bottle where you have to find the right person. So I don't know that they've really found that formula yet. And also you have to really, the most successful esports teams have super dedicated fan bases locally. If you look at like Houston Outlaws for Overwatch, like, they have a massively dedicated fan base. They love them. They love that team. And their fans are crazy about the team. They follow them. It's all the same things you see in other professional sports leagues. But the thing is like, it doesn't happen with every team.
What's it going to take? How do we fix that? I suppose
StarCraft 3.
StarCraft 3.
I suppose it is a maturing process where you get the esports athletes to become more camera ready. You know, maybe they hire a rowdy skeleton, but they get them more.
Yes.
You know, I look at Alex and I are Formula One fanatics. What turned that on around in the U.S. was the Netflix show Drive to Survive.
Great show. Amazing.
Exploded F1 in the U.S.
Yep.
And I don't know if it's intentional or not, but F1 seems to choose its drivers not just for their ability to drive. Clearly, they've got to have that, but they're all damn fine looking people with pretty good personas on camera, right?
Right, right. Well, you pick the people who are interesting, right? It's the same model as Real Housewives. It literally is, which is like you're following a group of people who are forced to interact with each other over a season, and there's an air of competitiveness to
it. Do we need that? Do we need a reality show based on an esports team?
Hi, so this is Benito, by the way.
Benito,
our tech director.
I was an esports journalist for like 3 years, and I ran the
Benito.
I ran all the esports coverage at GameSpot for a couple of years. So the problem with esports is the stigma attached to it in America. That's really it.
They're like, nerdy.
That's a big one too.
That's when esports was, when I was covering it, esports was about to take off, was like starting to do its takeoff. I was trying to be like on the vanguard of that. And what I noticed is that people are really willing to drop a lot of money if there's only if there's a promise of a lot of money. And like,
well, yeah,
and that's exactly what happened in the esports business. People dropped a ton of money.
Look at this guy, Disguised Toast, who created an esports team. He says, it cost me $1 million. It's a terrible business. Everyone's losing a lot of money. He created a team for Valorant Pro called DSG and lost just a ton of money.
But it's like, who's talking about Valorant?
Like, yeah, maybe that was a mistake.
I genuinely have these questions. It's just like, I don't know anybody. I know people who play Valorant, and it's a perfectly fine game, but I don't know anybody who's like so hype about it that it's their entire personality. The way that I literally know people whose entire personality is a football team.
Well, it's also a matter of time. Like,
I'm enjoying watching Alex because doesn't realize
that's true.
He's muted his mic, so he hasn't been able to get a word edgewise on this whole thing, and he is champing at the bit. If I might use
I have been a
phrase from an older sport. Yes. What's your thoughts, Alex?
So,
as a Dota 2 fan.
No, actually not at all. I've said this before, I think, on Twitter, but like when I was a child, I used to drive to my parents' office because they had faster internet so I could watch Korean language VODs of Brood War games that were uploaded to YouTube because there wasn't Twitch at that time.
Right.
So I am politely an esports OG in the sense that I've really cared about it for a long time. I think the problem was there was a period of rapid growth with things like the League of Legends pro scene. And then people got a little bit ahead of themselves on the revenue potential, put more money into it than it could sustain. And now we are dealing with a pretty standard business hangover.
Is that true, Benito? Would you say that's
100% accurate.
Yeah.
Like, post the same as the pandemic.
Yep.
Same as companies saying this is the new normal, this is the new baseline,
right. and
it wasn't. It wasn't
crash.
At all. It was just an anomaly,
bang,
and people overinvested. And
by the way,
it was just overinflated.
Historically, that seems to always happen. I think back to the railroad boom when we had when they finally built a cross country railroad in the United States. All the railroads of that time went bankrupt. But what we got out of it was the infrastructure, so a whole new generation of railroads could emerge. Mm. And the same thing they say happened in the tech bust at the end of the last century. There was an overbuild of fiber because everybody was so bullish in the late 90s that .com was going to rule the world. There was the .com bust, but we still have all of that fiber. And so I think that's a normal business cycle. Alex, you kind of follow the business cycle. I think that's accurate, yeah?
I think that's true in a lot of cases when we're talking about physical infrastructure. Like there was a canal building boom in Britain back in the day, right? The difference with esports though is it's pretty digital, and so there's less of an asset.
There's no infrastructure at all. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
unless you're talking about arenas
doing physical things, but it's not quite the same substance. I think also it's too advertising driven a product right now, even though they did manage to bring in blue chip sponsors. Like if you watch League of Legends pro scene, you'll see Visa logos and other big names, and that's great. And shout out to them. But it's not going to be growing as much as people thought it might a couple of years ago. And so people are dealing with the pain of overinvestment, but at the same time, compared to what there was when I was 15, 14, like the modern esports scene is so incredible. So sure, it's not going to take over the NFL or the NHL the next couple of years, but there's still so much going on that someone who never thought this would happen because no one else cared when I was a kiddo. Modern people that are fans have so much more. I'm just excited about that. So to me, I'm measuring from the bottom up, not from the top down on this.
Think about Dungeons and Dragons, which for a very long time was considered incredibly uncool, the foundations were there. And then it just took a few big hits like Critical Role and Stranger Things and everything to bring it back to the zeitgeist and make it part of like popular culture and make it cool. And then all of a sudden, like that was the thing. So to me, it's a long game. I mean, and I also share my bona fides. I was a professional Unreal Tournament 2003 player back in like 04, I think 04. I was like signed with the Global Gaming League and I got to open for Jane's Addiction in Cleveland. So that was my claim. That's my esports claim to fame. I used to play esports before esports was esports.
That's I believe amazing, but I there is a video of you.
I hope to God there is not
on stage at the concert.
Leo, There must never. I have thought this was scrubbed from the internet. I didn't, because this was before you. This is pre-YouTube, so I hope there isn't. Oh my God, no!
I was a Quake 3 person more than an Unreal Tournament person.
I think we played with the Quake guys, because I remember SoCrates specifically. Like I remember like a handful of guys that we hung out with all the time.
Yeah, and then who was Fatality? Of course, was one of
Fatality,
the early,
really early kind of esports. Esports influencer slash early adopter of esports scene. Like he was, I think he was like probably the most famous esports person.
League of Legends.
Like in the before time. In the early phases of esports.
From Instagram, here is Ashley playing Unreal Tournament with a
crowd of a bajillion people.
Jane's Addiction.
And what type of computer is that?
On a lime green.
That's an Alienware. Alienware laptop. You love to see it. I have my lip gloss stuffed in my skirt right there because I didn't have
your
pockets.
Your denim mini.
That's, man, early 2000s, wild time.
And Lincoln Park is still blowing up. It's a good time to be alive.
She's wearing a towel on her wrist because, you know, you don't want sweat on the mouse.
Humid. Yeah, it was a wrist guard, but also it was extremely humid in Cleveland. I will say Dave Navarro was really nice to us, and he was like very fascinated by esports. He was like asking us a lot of questions about it, which was super weird.
I just want to say there's one more aspect to this that no one talks about.
Benita, yes.
These games are owned by companies. Nobody owns basketball. Nobody owns football. Nobody owns hockey.
Very true. Yeah.
Well, and look what happened to the Mario Tour.
People who were throwing up Smash tournaments got cut off by Nintendo.
Off the Smash Tours.
The NBA isn't going to come in and stop somebody's basketball game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the story from last November. Nintendo shuts down Smash World Tour without any warning. Organizers say they'll lose hundreds of thousands of dollars. They thought Nintendo was happy with this tour, and it was very good. They weren't using mods or anything. It was a very good ad for Smash Brothers, or whatever they call that game, Super Smash Brothers. But Nintendo decided, and this was there was a whole bunch of complicated stuff going on with this. It wasn't just Nintendo unilaterally deciding. There were competitors and so forth. Didn't end well. And so that's part of the problem, too. I still feel like in my lifetime, this is going to happen. And I'm not going to live much longer, so it's going to happen pretty... It's coming soon.
Leo, you pretend to be like 97 years old, but you're still not.
Let me tell you something.
Well, you were talking about the railroads, and I was like, what were you, Leo? Like 5 or 6 when that happened?
I nailed the golden spike myself.
Yes.
We played when Unreal Tournament came out on the set of the Screensavers back in 99 or something.
Oh, man.
We built the ultimate gaming machine.
What a great game.
And we played it like crazy. We loved that
game. It's a really fun game, Unreal Tournament. The rocket launcher was so satisfying. Yeah. And the flat cannon was also like a very satisfyingly designed weapon.
But we would play the rocket launcher only level. And
that was so
much fun.
You know what I miss about games in that era is that they were really, really simple. So like I played a lot of Destiny and Destiny 2. And like I got to say,
it's too complicated.
Great game.
No, but it is.
Just,
I agree with you.
There's so much
stuff. There's too many. Dials and knobs and buttons. Give me a rocket launcher and like somebody over there. That's all I need. And a castle and I'll run around.
We're showing our age. Right
if you locked me in a room and said, Alex, you can only invite 4 friends over. You're playing Quake 3. Q3 DM6 is the map. And that's all you have to do. And here's this 12-pack of soda. I would have the best night of my life.
And I think that actually hurts esports because you can't just pick up and watch League of Legends and understand. I mean, you really have to. Maybe I'm wrong on that because I have to say there are, you know, football's pretty complicated. Cricket's pretty complicated. Yeah. And there are massive audiences for these games. But I feel like...
But those have institutional support.
They have institutional...
Right. Yeah, it has institutional support.
You grow up learning baseball, right? Yeah.
Right. You grow... And there are some... I mean, I think there are some initiatives they have that are out there that are like, you know... esports in high schools and stuff now, which like I'm seeing more of that. There's a that's becoming more prevalent.
Let me take a break because I like this conversation. We got some gamers here. Benito, thank you for chiming in. Please continue to do so. Yes. I forgot that you covered esports for all those
years. Get it, Benito.
Benito's awesome. Benito runs our board for the show and is one of our best editors and tech guys. He's a do-it-all studio guy. You worked at Twitch before this, right?
Yeah, right before this I worked at Twitch.
Yeah. We got to get the Benito cam going. Did you turn off the lights
and cameras?
There used to be lights and cameras back there. I think Benito's shy. Anyway, you're one of our, I think you might be our second newest. Viva's newer than you.
Viva and Ty.
And Ty, that's right. So you're pretty new here, but boy, we love having you here.
Thank you.
Let's take a little break. And we're not done with gaming. I want to talk some more about gaming in just a little bit, because I think there's a lot more to talk about, including the hot game of the week. But first, a word from our sponsor, Mint Mobile. Love the Mint Mobile. Gotta love this. I was looking at, you know, I have a subscription with all the major carriers because I have a bunch of phones, but also part of my job to review them. I was looking at one of these carriers. I just got a bill, $300. Of course, we have several phones in the family and stuff. But it's like, oh, if I could move that whole family to Mint Mobile, no brainer. I'm on $15 a month. That's all in. There's no hidden secret fees or nothing. Mint Mobile is the first company to sell premium wireless service online only. That means no stores. You can order from home. There's no hidden stuff. No secret plans. You just save a ton because they don't have to pay for retail. Their phone plans start at $15 a month. They have a family plan that's fantastic. It's very, the thing about the family plan, it's very simple. And I think sometimes you look at it and you go, wait a minute. No, that can't be that simple. Yeah, it's very simple. Premium wireless for just $15 a month. All the plans include unlimited talk and text, high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You use your own phone if you want. They will send you a SIM. They don't even charge you for the SIM. Plus, they do eSIM now, so if you have an eSIM-capable phone, easy peasy, you could be using Mint Mobile tonight. You can port your phone number over. All your contacts go with you. They sell phones as well. They're very flexible. It's a no-brainer. Now, what do you get for $15 a month? You get unlimited nationwide talk and text. And by the way, Mint Mobile has inflation. They inflate the amount of data you can use. It used to be 4 gigabytes a month when I started this. It's now 5 gigabytes of data a month. I think that's enough for most people. And now they've got, what's this thing with the 15 gigabytes a month? And 20. And unlimited. All $15? All plans? Wait a minute. Hold on there. Hold up. Holy cow. Look at that. To get your new wireless plan for $15 a month, you pick the plan to get it shipped to your door for free. Go to mintmobile.com/twit. mintmobile.com/twit. It is, I mean, it's just, it's, I don't understand why you wouldn't do it. It's so fantastic. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month. mintmobile.com/twit. Ooh, they've got a deal on the Google Pixel. They sell phones too. I got my iPhone SE from them. It was also $15 a month. So for $30 a month, brand new phone, and at the time, 4 gigabytes a month, plus unlimited talk and text. Unbelievable. mintmobile.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. Ashley was getting hot in here because she was using her fan. I think all this talk about gaming, getting you excited.
Permanently roasting in the studio when the lights are on.
I'm sorry.
Okay. People don't realize how big of a problem that is because I have to turn off my AC unit.
Yeah, you got to shut everything down off.
And so I just slowly broil when we do Twit. And then when we end,
gotta keep
I just
a fan.
Like, yeah.
Oh, what can we do? I like your fan. It's a Japanese fan.
I just keep a fan. Got it at DragCon.
It's great.
Really good. You want a good fan? Good high quality fan? That get it at DragCon.
That is a large fan. I mean, that is a big.
It is. And it's got a good snap.
Ooh.
Like very good. Very nice. Yeah, it's good.
Wow.
I like it.
All right. Yeah, you don't really need to wear wrist guards on this show, but maybe maybe you might have to start if it gets any hotter. All right. So you're all playing Diablo 4. That's the game of the week, isn't it? Came out
game of my life.
6th. Well, yeah, I'm with you. I played Diablo 1. I played Diablo 2. Played Diablo 3 over and over again for a long time. 4 seems pretty similar, right?
Yeah. I mean, well, I don't think, you know, core Diablo is...
Diablo's live, loot, Diablo.
Kill, loot, repeat. I mean, it's just like, that's it. That's the best thing about Diablo.
That's why I like it. It's pretty mindless, yeah, right?
It's great. It's a click, 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 click. I like the clicking sound. It just reminds me of being in high school. My best friend and I had a mutual friend who was the manager. I don't know what this guy was thinking. Guy owned a land cafe in our hometown, and he made my 16-year-old friend Ron a manager, and he did not care about the business, I guess. And so Ron would just run after school. The land cafe would open at 3 o'clock. It was just never open before that because no one ever showed up. So he would run it from like 3 to 11. And then after hours, my best friend Juan and I would go and he would let us in and we would just play Diablo 2 until, you know, 4 in the morning or whatever. And so, and he would just let us play for free. So, cause neither of us had the internet connection to like play Diablo at home. So that was my high school. My mom was always like, I don't worry about you because like you're going to go play Diablo at a land cafe, playing computer games at a land cafe. And I'm like, I am so lame. Like, I'm so lame.
Now, I should warn you, it does not work on a Mac. No. Whoopi Goldberg was pretty darn upset. She bought it and found
she
out
mad.
They had been. They used to work on Macs, right? Mm-hmm. No Mac this time around, but who cares? I'm playing it on an Xbox. You guys are PC players. It is cross.
I got PS5.
PS5, but it's cross-platform, yeah, which is nice.
Yeah,
but I think it's
and you
really
can log in cross-platform too. So that's like I like that as well.
It's basically
I can like log in as my same
the
character.
Slot machine of video games, right?
It is a little bit. It does feel a little bit like that.
There's
it
no
does feel a little bit like roulette.
There's no strategy.
You're not wrong.
You just hit. You're going tap 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 till somebody dies and drops some loot. You pick up the loot. You tap 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 tap.
Well, I don't. Okay, wait a minute. All right, hold on a minute, Leo, because I'm in world tier. I'm almost a world tier 3, and I would just like to say that later in the game that actually there is some strategy there, and
okay,
and I'm a little sad. I think. I rolled a necromancer. This is like my number one character. Last D3, I rolled a witch doctor and I was.
Wait a minute,
like,
you say you rolled. You let it pick what you're going to be?
No, I just chose. I chose.
Oh,
I
you chose. It did. Yeah.
So, but yeah, so I have a necromancer and so I have been enjoying that. And there is some, depending on the build you have, it's like, you know, you have a glass cannon mage, then it's like there is some strategy there that usually involves evade. Like you're dashing a lot.
What is world tier 3? Because I'm playing world tier 2 and it hasn't been very hard yet. I'm not as far as you guys
I don't are. Want it to be hard.
So world tier 3 is you can unlock. It's the next difficulty up. So you get more gold, better loot drops and all that stuff. You have to finish the campaign and a capstone dungeon though to unlock it. So it's locked until you finish the campaign and get everything done.
Okay, so I want to make a hot take here because going back to the D&D thing, one very interesting thing that I picked up recently is Baldur's Gate 3. And
Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, and I know we're all aging ourselves by talking about the old RPGs we used to play, but I will say, like, I've only played some D&D in my life. I will say Baldur's Gate 3 is a better game than Diablo 4. Diablo 4 is perhaps more easy. Like, it's easier to enjoy because there's less thinking involved. It's just slashing things. But I think BG3 really is going to be a high watermark in gaming and storytelling.
Baldur's Gate is a very good franchise. I hate to pit them against each other because I think you could enjoy. If you love Diablo, you would probably really like Baldur's Gate. Okay, so fair. There's so few kind of really solid, like kind of top down looty mans instead of shooty mans. I call them looty mans. They're like looty man games. And like, I feel like, you know, between the two of them, you could have a really good time. I am looking forward to seasons. Like, I think that'll be interesting. And they keep saying, can we talk about the cow level? Because
is there a cow level this year?
Well, here's the thing, Leo. Every time one of these games launches, they say there is no cow level. This is the company line. You have to say there is no cow level.
But there always
could be one.
Is a cow level.
But maybe there isn't. And also, like
what
some
is,
people
first
have
of
noticed.
All, tell people what the cow level is, because not okay, everybody.
In Diablo 2, there's a secret level in every Diablo game. So in Diablo 3, it was Whimsyshire, which was a very colorful and bright place where you could literally murder like little unicorns and like teddy evil teddy bears and stuff.
Love it.
It was very funny, but you have to go through like a very specific chain of events, quest chain, and do all these things to unlock it. And so this also happened in Diablo 2. So in Diablo 2, there were like rumors, whispers of a cow level. And everybody was just like, all you know, Blizzard was like, there is no cow level. We don't know what you're talking
about. Here it is. It's all cows.
And all it is cows. It's all cow men. It's all cow men with axes. And so, oh God, this is really taking me back. And so, yeah, so this is the cow level. And once again, Diablo 4 launches and Rod Ferguson is like, nah, we wanted to stick with the grim nature Sanctuary.
It's a grim game. It's probably grimmer than very any grim. Diablo previous. Yes.
It's very sad. Like all that I will. The supplementary writing on Diablo 4 is really good. Like really, really good. Some of the
all
side
the
quests
NPCs
are fantastic.
Have such sad stories.
Interesting, sad stories. Like it's very depressing. Very depressing.
It's called Diablo. I mean, yeah, like yeah. I don't know. Like if it was anything else but that. Like what if you bought Diablo 5 and
it's
it was
supposed
like, this
to
is
be
actually
depressing.
Set in the Shire? You're so, a little yeah. So everyone's happy.
Ashley, as an expert, I mean, clearly Alex and I are punters compared to you. As an expert, could you describe this game for somebody who's never played it? Pretend that I'm your older.
Well, the story or the actual like type
just, like,
of game?
What's the,
it is?
Yeah, just what is the experience like? I don't need the story. Nobody.
Okay.
No, look, does anybody really care about the story? What Sanctuary is, and
I care, Leo. How dare you, okay. Daddy Inarius? Happy Father's Day, Daddy Inarius.
Oh yeah, Happy Father's Day, Inarius. I forgot.
Happy Father's Day to you, yeah, Inarius. Yeah. We've all forgotten to wish Inarius a Happy Father's Day. So. Because we all know Rathma's not doing it for him. Anyway, what I would say to people is Diablo is a top-down.
Yes, you're not first person.
It's horror game.
You're not wandering through seeing top-down. It as first person. You're looking at, what is it called? Isometric. You're looking down, isometric. Yep. You're looking down at your player and the enemies.
Yep. And it's sort of like a three quarters view. It's not directly top down.
Right. Three quarters view. Yeah.
And so you have this three quarters top down view of your character. And this game is basically the goal of this game is to like just demolish the hordes of enemies in front of you and collect loot and make your character look cool.
And then there's towns.
Like this is like the thing. Yeah. There's towns, I guess, fine.
And you sell the loot back or you salvage
get money.
It.
Gold.
Get money.
Loot and gold.
Loot and gold. And then you go back out. And you get quests, but the quests really are very simple. Go in there, fight a lot of bad guys, get the loot, and then leave.
Get the loot and get out.
Yeah, the quests are always...
It's a game where it's like loot, 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 and then also, you know, it's really fun to play with your friends. You can play multiplayer. It's multiplayer as well.
Yeah.
You've missed a very important part of the Diablo experience, which is picking up your 74th scythe and trying to figure out in your inventory
is this better?
Which one's actually the best one. Because it's like plus 4% all elemental inversions. Like, okay, cool. This one has 4% intelligence.
It's so complicated. And did they have the compare? Did they have compare before?
Yeah, they do. They
okay,
do.
I like compare. So I have compare next to what I'm looking at. And it's a little better here. It's a little worse here. I don't know. It's poison resistance versus lightning resistance. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, okay. I thought that was just me. I thought you pros.
It's a complicated stats game.
Yes, actually, you're in Southern California, right?
Yes.
And Leo, you're in Northern California.
Yes, and you're
both
Rhode
places
Island.
Where certain consumables are illegal in certain parts of the country. They're not. But if you have consumed any of those substances and you are trying to decide which pair of gloves or boots is the
very
best,
hard.
It is impossible. It is literally impossible.
No, it's not impossible. The answer just becomes the prettiest ones.
Okay, that's how I play.
I am a fashion. I'm fashion Diablo. This is like my game that I play. I just want to look really cool. So it's like whatever it takes to get to cool. Also, you have transmog. So it's like you can, if you have a piece of gear that you look really cool in, but the stats are terrible. You can just most of them you can salvage, and then it will become available to like apply as a skin to your character, and then you can also dye everything and make it match, which is really nice.
Oh,
you just blew my mind.
That's why you're collecting all those strange herbs.
Got to get my death mallow or whatever is out there. No, I got to make elixirs with that stuff. And you do all your upgrades and everything. That's like really, it's really nice.
It's a lot of fun. If you want to kill not just a couple of, like, you know, devil imps or large cows. You want to kill thousands of them mindlessly. It's amazing. If that's not your jam, it's not your jam. But, like, it's well done. I'm very happy that D4 seems to be as good as D3. Yeah.
Yeah. Solid.
I wish I could show you.
There's a whole sub community within the Diablo 4 community dedicated to, like, fashion Diablo. Like, it's just people, like, showing their stees. The drip is strong. Like, it's really good.
I'm so here for it.
I wish I could show you how ugly my druid is. It is. There's no fashion here at all. It's just the ugliest thing you've ever seen.
Leo, I'm going to tweet right at you.
I will take a screenshot and tweet it back.
All right, I'm going to take a screenshot of mine and I'll send it over. Okay. I think I look cool. I have a red necromancer costume.
I have a fat druid. He's really fat. And he's wearing, like, for some reason, antlers. And and he's got the ugliest, like, he's got a skirt on. It's just, it's horrific. And there's nothing I could do about it. So I'm just going to stay.
You're just out there living your life in nature.
I'm out there living my life in nature. Exactly. Exactly. Speaking of games, speaking of Whoopi Goldberg, Whoopi, there is a way to play Diablo 4 on the Mac. Apple kind of let this out at Worldwide Developer Conference, and a few people picked up on it. Christina Warren's article here in Inverse. Thank you, Christina. I didn't know she was still writing. She's now at GitHub. She's on the show last week. Didn't mention that she was going to write this long article about Apple releasing update to Wine that lets you run DirectX 12 games on Apple Silicon computers. It's a 20,000 line code patch for Wine, but it works. And ostensibly, Apple says that it's not to play Diablo 4 on the Mac. It's just to see if Diablo 4 works well and it would be portable to the Mac. But as it turns out, a lot of people are using it to run. Well, here's an example. A Diablo 4 running at 60 frames.
Good for them.
Yes. On an M2 Max computer. So you can absolutely do it. This is at Ultra. And so Whoopi, just, you know, you might want to check this. Check this out. I don't know how your hacking skills are these days.
Yeah.
But you can do it. Was I stupid to do a druid? Should I have done a necromancer?
No.
You're both necromancers. There must be something about it.
I like having a skeleton entourage. I like to have an entourage. I was a witch doctor in D3 and I had a whole bunch of minions.
Yeah, minions. I don't know. Do druids get minions? Probably not.
I think you, do you get wolves?
You get one minion.
We might get a bear with us.
I think you can turn into a bear.
I can turn into a bear, which is really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exciting. That seems cool. I rolled a barbarian and named her Barbie, but I haven't leveled her yet.
I think that when Diablo 3, I was playing as a barbarian most of the time because I liked
that. That was a fun class in D3. That was a fun class in D3 a lot.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I play a wizard, so.
Oh, you're a wizard, not a necromancer. Well, it's kind of the same.
No. I was going to say, this is wizard off topic, but D3. In Baldur's Gate 3, I play as a wizard, and I said to change it up and be a necromancer in D4.
Evil wizard.
Bone wizard.
Yeah.
I'd rather talk about gaming than the rest of this, but all right. I guess we have to change the subject. Anything you want to say, Benito, before we move on?
No, my taste about Diablo is far too spicy for the internet.
Oh, you don't like Diablo?
Oh,
tell us now.
No, I've just I've divorced myself from all Skinner boxes. So
it is a Skinner box. You press the button. You get a little bird food.
Yeah, I don't play loot games anymore.
It is an absolutely. That's all it is a loot game. You play Dwarf Fortress. What is that? What do you call that?
That's a deep simulation.
Deep. It's deep.
No, it's not.
It's a simulation.
Well, you probably like Farthest Frontier. That's a simulation.
Sims are the best.
Be a Beaver on Timberborn. That's a good one. The only enemy in Timberborn apparently is a drought.
But yes,
if you could survive drought. As you said, Alex, before the show, it's all about water management.
it's a great game. Or you can play Frostpunk and your enemy is the cold. I mean, like, these are fun things.
Yeah. Lena Khan, we were talking about her. I'm sorry, not Lena Khan.
And my other hero in the Biden administration, Jessica Rosenworcel. Rosenworcel. Can you say this for me? Rosenworcel, chairman of the FCC, says everybody hates data caps. But ISPs clearly, and I've been having this debate, I've had this debate for 20 years with John Z. Dvorak. She's now confirming that I was right. ISPs clearly have the technical ability to offer unlimited data. It costs them very little. So the FCC has announced that there will be a notice of inquiry asking comments from you, the people, public, to better understand, quote, to better understand why the use of data caps continues to persist despite the increased broadband needs of consumers and providers demonstrated technical ability to offer unlimited data plans.
Well, if you're going to download a fine new game like Diablo 4 or Baldur's Gate 3, you're going to download like what, 60, 70, 80, 90 gigs? And if you have a 100 gigabyte data cap, well, no more internet for you.
I used to have a terabyte a month cap on Comcast, and I pay, and you know, this is the, obviously their plan, a huge amount of money not to have a data cap. Just because I don't want to have to think about it. I hated it. I get to the end of the month and say, you know, you're almost, you've almost gone through your terabyte. So
I used to have a cap on my Verizon plan. I had like one of those old 10 gig plans before it all went to fake unlimited. And I went over a couple of times and that made me absolutely furious. And then now they just throttle you up to a certain point. But it, this feels a lot like back in the day when you had to pay for like a certain number of SMS messages per month.
Oh,
do you remember that?
Yes.
And it was like you get 500 free text messages a month.
It used to be 10 cents a message. It was crazy.
And it was misery.
And you know what happened as a result? Go ahead. Tell us.
Oh, I was going to say, like, one thing that we had was actual competition in the mobile scene, a number of players, and then we saw an overall better consumer solution down the road. The problem with ISPs is that they're often effectively regional monopolies, and so they're able to enact a greater tax on essentially normal usage of their product.
Well, what happened? The FCC, what happened is WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger and Telegram and a bunch of data-based messengers emerged so you wouldn't have to pay. So then what did they do? Well, now we better have data caps because we can't get our 10 cents a message anymore. So we're going to get you on the data. And I think there's a direct correlation between the cellular carriers trying to make money on text messages and then saying, well, well instead we'll make it on data.
That's a good call.
Yeah.
I mean, like, no one likes their ISP. I've literally, in my entire life, never heard someone say, you know what? My ISP is fantastic. No complaints.
So
the best you get is, it's fine.
And if, by the way, if you do talk to somebody who likes their ISP, you can't get it.
It doesn't exist anymore. I
have Rocky Mountain Net, and it's fantastic. But you have to be in the southwest corner of Montana to get it. Thank you. Actually, we have a very good ISP here, which you guys can't get, called Sonic. And they offer 10 gigabit symmetric fiber.
And corn dogs.
And corn dogs for everyone. Meta has decided to lower the age requirement for Quest VR headsets to 10. Used to be 13.
As if any 10-year-old's ever heard of Facebook. By the way, like... anybody under the age of 20 cares about Facebook in any capacity.
Or wants to buy a MetaQuest. I think kids like like a VR initially.
Sure.
And then they get bored
with it.
And they want
cool. It's weird.
They want a lightsaber and say, forget it. Are you going to tell your son about when Darth... is he listening?
And my husband is like a vanguard against people spoil, like he will tackle a person about to spoil
so them. You're not going to say, hey, you know this guy Darth Vader who's invading you? No, you're
we
not
literally
say
have like pull we literally have like blacked out not blacked out but like we've literally like we won't read him some of his 5-minute Star Wars stories.
That's awesome.
To keep the secret,
because the secret.
Like, he'll be devastated.
Are you looking forward to the, like, how old will he be when he can watch episode 4 or
Empire,
whatever.
God, when he could watch Empire probably. Yeah. Well, he's seen 1 and 2.
Okay.
He's seen episode 1 and episode 2. So right now, as he knows it, and some Clone Wars.
You're making him watch it in chronological order?
He's the hero of, well, I wanted to do it in the machete order, which is, so Drew McWeeny is a film writer. He's a really fantastic film writer. And he used to do this thing called Film Nerd 2.0. And he talked about introducing his kids to movies and like speaking about them critically to his kids and all this other stuff. His kids are grown up now. He was going to write a book for a while. And one of his posts that really stuck with me was the way he introduced them to Star Wars. And it was, he showed them 4, 5, then went back and showed them 1, 2, 3, then showed them 6. And his justification for this was, he was like, they went along for the ride in A New Hope. They were devastated by this like revelation in episode 5 in Empire Strikes Back. And then before finding out how it all worked out or like what happened, he made them go back because they wanted to know what happened.
So
like,
you're a machete order Skywalker follower.
I like that. Well, I think the machete order cuts out one. Yeah. Like, I think that's a specifically cuts out one.
But the idea is you follow Luke Skywalker.
I want to cut it up a little.
You follow his evolution. Following his storyline, focusing on his storyline.
Yeah. But we're doing it with him, like just in chronological order. Because the thing is like he'll be four in like a couple weeks. So it's hard for him to remember stuff like that, even though he's got a memory like a steel trap sometimes. So as of right now, like Anakin Skywalker is the hero of the Clone Wars to him. So this will be.
You should start with Andor, right? Isn't that the earliest? Is that the earliest one?
I think no, that's after Revenge of the Sith. That's after Revenge of the Sith.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Yeah, and it's right here's before the, Rogue One, here's, the events of Rogue One.
The USA Today unaccountably has an entire article on how to watch it and what orders there are.
Watch it in whatever order you feel like. I mean, honestly.
Order of release, chronological with the TV series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I don't know that we'll do everything because, like, we'll probably just do the movies and then he can watch the TV shows and stuff when he gets a little older.
Yeah. That's a stir.
And he really loves, lightsabers. He has a book. There's a really cool, it's like lightsabers. It's a book of lightsabers and it's all just high res images of lightsabers from Star Wars and who they belong to in a short little bio. And they have light side and dark side. And then like the new Jedi, like it's really cool. It's a cool little book.
I mean, this is the new Grimm's Fairy Tales, right? He's 4. This is like instead of fairy tales, this is his new. And I think that's actually what George Lucas wanted. I think that was his whole. Yeah. This is a new mythology.
He really loves the hero's journey.
Yeah.
That's like his all-time favorite thing. He loves Joseph Campbell. And so this is his hero's journey. And he loved old pulp stuff like The Lone Ranger and, all of those radio serials. And so this is, that was his version of it. And I think,
makes sense.
It's just really fun. It's like a fun space opera. It's not. I didn't get into Star Wars when I was a kid because I missed it. Like it wasn't in theaters. So the first time I was exposed to it, I was like, 15.
Yeah. When I was a kid, it was Howdy Doody. We didn't have Star Wars.
Oh, Howdy Doody time.
Okay. I've let this go on for a long time now. I'm going to jump in.
Yes.
Given that every single Star Wars movie is the same and they're all bad, does it matter what order you watch them in?
Ooh.
Like, oh my God, Ben's what was that words. Conversation?
No,
I love that Alex says this as the parent of a very small child.
Yeah, wait till
because
he's 4.
In a few
She's
years,
4,
you're going to change your mind. I'm telling you.
That's the most important thing, Alex. They're kids' stories. And
they're
perfect for a kid 4 perfect. Years old. Because they're children's stories.
He's upset. Like, he wants to watch lightsaber fights. We literally have a YouTube playlist called Lightsaber Battles. And it is all just fights with lightsabers.
How does he feel about Disney?
He's like, we live very close to Disneyland, so we have magic keys and we go a lot.
Are you going to add Hey Disney voice to your Amazon Echo?
Absolutely not. We don't have any voice assistants in this house. We don't. We're not that kind
that
of family.
Instant no. That was a hard
hell no.
Immediate
that was a hell
instant.
No.
No, I don't want any voice assistants in my house. It's just not a thing I'm interested
You're
in.
You're smart.
My father-in-law has dozens of, he had like boxes of like the Google Home Minis and it was pandemic. So whenever you said like, sorry, Siri, set an alarm or whatever, the whole house would just go off like a bomb.
Yeah, welcome
and
to my
it
house.
It was a terrible couple of years.
No, welcome to my house. I have, everywhere there is a voice assistant, I have Siri, Echo, and Google side by side. Everywhere.
Leo, no.
Everywhere.
Leo.
And exactly like your father-in-law, if you say Echo, if you say the keyword, it wakes up in several different rooms, and you have to say, no, this one. If I ask Google to play a song, it plays everywhere. Oh, I forgot. I also have Sonos.
I have Sonos.
Yeah. But do you have the voice of Sonos?
Nope, absolutely not. Nope.
We bought the same as you.
If you say, hey, Sonos, I get the owner of Los Pollos Hermanos telling me. I can't do that. Gus Fring. Gus Fring.
Man.
It's a little creepy because it's clearly Gus Fring, and he mostly can't do anything. So he says, I'm sorry. I wonder if I can play this. Is this?
That's unnerving.
Let's see if this, let me turn on my sound and see if this is Gus Fring's voice.
Hey, Sonos, what's playing?
This is Superstar by Beach House.
Yeah, see, it's Gus Fring answering.
It's Giancarlo Esposito, man.
Esposito. I love him as an actor.
He's so good.
I'm not sure why I'm coming out of my speakers. Jan LeCun, who is the one of the fathers of AI and is working on AI at Meta, says, good news, AI won't destroy jobs forever. Just for now. I got nothing. This is a BBC headline. I just love it. I don't know what else to say about that.
Not forever.
Yeah.
I'll jump in here. So how many technological revolutions have we had going back in time? Like agriculture, wheel, industrial revolution. Like,
are you going to go all through all of them?
Five?
Now?
Like really major ones, like probably what? Between 5 and 7.
Sure. Pick a number. You can even bring in some smaller ones too. Make it 25.
Yeah. Sure.
Unemployment right now in the U.S. is like, what, 4%, 3%? It's very, very low. I don't think this is going to be the first technological revolution that actually ends human employment. So that's,
that's my take. I like that.
This is going to impact jobs, sure, but everything has. And so to me, the whole concern about AI taking over the economy is a little hyperbolic. So this to me is more him saying, look, things are going to change, but it'll be okay. And far be it for me to agree with Meta on something, but yeah, I think Jan LeCun is dead on here.
He's right. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry about it. It's going to be fine.
Speaking of ISPs, Comcast has complained to the FCC. You know, the FCC has passed this bill, or Congress passed this bill, that you'd have to have these broadband facts, just like nutrition labels, next to your bill, you know, next to your bill, next to your advertisements, so that consumers will know exactly what speed you're going to get at what price and so forth. In a filing last week, Comcast told the FCC, we can't. It's too complicated. It's too hard. We don't.
Well,
have they ever tried to cancel themselves, their own service?
That's hard
themselves?
Too. Yeah.
That's really hard too. It's really complicated, but you know what? I know people who have done it.
This is an admission of guilt, right? This is not a defense. Yeah. This is saying
this is too complicated.
Right. We do need the system because we can't even do it ourselves. And I hope the government says, okay, then maybe you should make it simpler.
Yeah, like really, that's the answer. That's the response.
And I would point out, Comcast billing software seems to be able to figure it out.
Consistently, in fact, every month for everybody on time.
Yeah, so weird how that happens.
Comcast doesn't actually want to show you how much it's going to cost. That's the fact.
That's like, you know, Cheesecake Factory went crazy when they said, "Oh, you got to put the calorie counts next to everything on the menu." It's like it's the same thing. They were just like, "We can't possibly calculate this. Like, have you seen the size of our portions?
We can't print them in these zeros. We're running out of ink."
There's too many zeros here. People will think it's the price.
That 10 points for that joke. That was actually fantastic. But this reminds me a little bit of like my family's Verizon bill. Every month I get a text saying, thank you for paying this. This was charged to your account. And it just feels like a random number that goes up by like 2% a month. And I swear to God, in like 5 years, it's going to be an infinite amount of money.
Yes.
But I have no idea how the number was put together. Like zero idea. They just take some money every month and I go, okay. And that's how I feel about my ISP as well. So simplifying this makes a lot of sense. And I hope that the 7 people who work at the FCC can take on a industry worth several $100 billion. More power to them.
It's just so funny that we can't figure this out. Our billing software can, but we're not gonna figure this out. Hey, let's take a quick break. Want to wrap things up, and I got to find out about Rowdy Skeleton.
which is your brand new business, right?
Yeah. Yeah. This is my, we launched a media training company. I'm excited about it.
What's media training? What does that mean?
Well, you know, when you see somebody from a company and they are on something like a developer direct, or if they are talking to the press, usually executives get extensive media training. But there are lots of people at companies who don't get media training, and they should, because we there are a lot of companies out there who wish they had more people who could speak eloquently and impactfully about the business and services they provide. And so instead of leaning on your, you know, your PR arm or your HR arm to help your employees speak on camera, which can be very difficult and is often a very specific skill set. Leo, you know what's up with that.
Like, well, I'm feeling a teleprompter isn't easy. Am I doing something, anything that you would note that I'm doing something wrong?
You're great, Leo. You're a legend. You're an icon.
I was so insulted because Tech TV brought in a media training person, and we were all supposed to bring her our tapes and sit down, and I was so insulted. It's like, I don't want to be trained by you. I don't even know what you're. But
well,
this
you were already a host.
But I was already on TV. Exactly.
Yeah, this is for this, we like
this
to
makes
train
a lot
people
of sense.
Up who are nervous on camera.
How do you train people to be better on camera? I would like to know that.
We do a lot of different things. I mean, recently we just did we built from the ground up a workshop for Microsoft for the Xbox team.
Oh, cool.
And a lot of the full-time employees at Microsoft who were part of the program were very scared to be on camera. And we created a week-long workshop that involved them learning how to read teleprompter better. Doing things like...
Do you dress up as Lilith and jump out from behind the camera?
Totally. Jump scare people. Yeah, just to get the people. 100%. I will do that. If the price is right, I will media train you any way that you prefer. But yeah, we did a really fun workshop. And by the end of the week, I mean, even after the first day, we showed them the very first thing they did on camera and then the last thing,
awesome.
Most recent thing. And they couldn't believe the difference. I mean, it's such a stark
fantastic.
Difference for so many of them. And to give them that sense of confidence and really get them to a headspace where we also do things like we train people on abuse, online abuse and harassment prevention. We tell people how to protect their peace.
How do you do that?
When they start appearing on camera, and that comes from my, you know, many years of experience.
Oh, Jesus, yes.
Being harassed by people on the internet.
Yeah. How do you keep your peace? How do you? Because I'm working on that. I don't know if I'm very
log
good at
out.
It. That's log it, out. That's, yeah.
Now, a big one is for me, like a really big one is I tend to. My first one is I always tell all my friends and family, please do not go fight for me on the internet.
Yes.
That's like such a big one that
yes.
a lot of people don't do. They
don't
think about
engage.
It.
Yeah.
It's like, you cannot go defend me on the internet to everybody who doesn't like me. And then also the other part of the second half of that is you won't be for everybody and that's okay.
Right.
Like, it's totally fine. You will not be for everybody. And that's fine. You're going to have people who find you very annoying. I'm sure there are people listening right now who find me very annoying and that's okay.
And
I totally respect your opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, if people who are listening right now find you annoying, Leo, I'm not sure what they're doing listening, but I would argue
some
they show
people,
up for you.
I don't, this always puzzled me, but there are people who hate watch.
That's true.
Or hate
That's
listen.
True. There are some
like,
hate watchers.
I hate
Shout
you
out to
and
all
I'm
of our haters.
Listen to you.
Every day.
Tell you everything you're
thank
doing
you.
Wrong. It's the
thank
first,
you.
It's the, I would not choose to be in the public eye if, I mean, don't do it unless you really have to because
yeah
as soon as you're
also,
as soon as you stick your
so
head
many.
Up you're somebody's gonna try
yeah,
to chop
tough.
It out
yeah but there's also you know the one thing that I think we have seen and continue to see is you know there are a lot of companies out there who really want to diversify their stable of on-camera talent because you know maybe they do have a very diverse pool of employees but they are not necessarily diverse at the top, which like that's its own issue, but
what
you know,
you
maybe
think,
they want to train more people to talk about what they do specifically at a company.
What do you think about Apple's decision to not do events in person anymore, to pre-record something and then show it on a screen?
I really like it. I think that there is a a love of live events that I have that, you know, because there is that, oh, anything can happen feeling.
I like that.
Apple, I really like that. And I do think that they...
Apple doesn't want that for good reason.
But you also, there's also a loss there, right? When you take away the live event, you don't get like the raucous applause of a crowd, right? Which... And to some extent, that can be really exciting and help you do a better job on stage because you really feel the energy.
Yeah.
That's why. So
we,
they've
by the way, that's why we do these shows live in front of an audience.
Yeah, it's like exciting.
It's always going to have more energy and be better if you don't have a second take available to you, I think.
Right. And yeah. So, but I think Apple really just... in and of themselves, like they are they're a company cautious. That is very much all about control. Yeah. Well, they're about control. They have a very controlled image brand, you know, the message, like they're very tight on their messaging. Like, and for all of the fun and jokes we can make about things like, you know, the reality distortion field, like that is, you know, that's a real thing that Apple has done a very good job of curating. Like they're very good curators, yeah. both externally and also like internally with their message. They are laser focused on that stuff. And so it didn't surprise me that they moved to that. And I think the pandemic gave them a very good excuse to move to that format. But it also is it's hard because you do get a lot of takes. But the thing is, you know, if you don't know how to read teleprompter the right way, like it's still going to look like you're reading. And there are executives that I can still see, like Apple and at other companies, that are very clearly like reading off a teleprompter because they're not good at it. And they're also, I mean, we see like the Oscars where an actor, this, you know, getting paid $20 million a movie just cannot read a teleprompter to save their life. It's a very specific skill.
Oh, yeah. Who so was it that on that Samsung event? It was a director, right? Who?
Michael Bay. Michael Bay.
The prompter.
I'll
went
never
down,
forget that.
And he
I'll
lost never forget it. It. He couldn't.
He lost it, and he left.
He left.
He stormed off stage.
Wow.
Do you remember that, Alex? Do you remember that? It was at CES.
No, I've been to a number of CESs, but that was back when I still drank, so I don't really remember many of them.
It's a truly iconic moment in CES's history.
Here's a little bit of it if you want to see it.
Director and producer, Michael Bay.
This is so awkward.
So this is a Samsung reveal.
Good afternoon, Michael.
You're getting this famous director out here.
My job as a director is I get to dream for a living.
Michael, you know, you're known for such unbelievable action. What inspires you? How do you come up with these unbelievable ideas?
This is all on prompter.
I create visual worlds that are so beyond everyone's normal life experiences. And Hollywood is a place that creates a viewer.
He has no idea what he's going
to
say.
What I try to do is, as a director, I try to...
He also seems very nervous.
This is causing me physical pain.
Off, sorry, but I'll just wing this.
Tell us what you think.
Yeah, we'll wing it right now.
This is probably why he's behind the camera.
An emotional ride.
Not and, in front of the camera. He can't remember any of the points.
But anybody can learn this.
Yeah.
Anyone can learn this.
This makes me want to die inside.
How does it die? How do you think it's going to impact?
I think Michael Bay died inside.
Your movie.
He walks off eventually.
Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Okay. That's it.
Michael Bay,
thank you. Yikes. We just paid him $500,000 for nothing.
Okay. So a couple of things. One. You have to. People who enjoy being on stage are a different breed. I'm actually only.
Are you shy?
I've done. Yeah. I'm a shy introvert. I fake it here and there, but I get what happened to him. Also, don't teleprompt and script a conversation because it'll always sound like that.
It always sounds terrible. Yes.
But going back to the Apple conversation, I want to say that I do agree that it is a better way for a company without a singular star to create a consistent product. Mm-hmm. It is a very powerful multi-hour infomercial that nerds, myself, still tune into.
Yeah, we all watched it.
I will say, though.
We were all glued to it. Yeah.
Never missed one. But I will say this. Go back and watch Steve Jobs introduce the first iPhone and watch how that event felt.
He's brilliant.
Versus
every
other of these pre-recorded things, because it has taken the soul out of it and allowed them to essentially turn it into a commercial that is not compelling in the same way. And so to me, there has been something lost there. Maybe it was never preservable, but it's definitely, I think, I don't think the video stuff is as good.
No, that was my feeling, but I think Ashley's right. I mean, how many Steve Jobs are there?
Right.
And you know,
is probably a lot safer. But I do agree, you lose a lot of energy. But that's why I like live music compared to recorded music. It's why I like live theater compared to movies. I like live because it's made of people. Yes. And the canned stuff has somewhat soulless.
But I can train you for both, whatever you need.
I am so thrilled that you're doing this. You and Ross Miller, two people who really know what they're doing with many thousands of hours on camera time in front of the microphone.
And behind it. I mean, we both are producers and Ross is a development person. And we've spent a lot of time just by proxy of having been around, for a while, it's like you just pick up little things that maybe, you don't get trained on. And also, there's a lot of PR teams and stuff out there who are just being crushed by the workload they have. And it's like, you can always call us. Like if you're overwhelmed, you can't do it, then you can just call us. And we're happy to do it. And we scale to size. So it's like we can do the biggest companies and the smallest startups. Like we're happy to do it.
Some people are naturals at it, but everybody can learn how to do it, I think. And
everyone can learn how to be compelling and natural on camera. Yeah.
But you have to learn it. It's not something that comes natural. I was terrible I started on the radio. I was on the radio. I was terrible for 10 years. I mean, really bad. Yeah. And
I was awful.
Yeah. Until I did it long, and had enough hours under my belt, but also I think until I stopped trying to appeal to people and gave up. As soon as I thought,
I
gave up that started going well. Honestly.
No, I think that happens a lot of the time. It's like you're trying to force a square peg into a round hole and it doesn't work. And then once you give up on that, you're just like, I'm just going to do this and see what happens. Like
I was ingratiating.
That's the best part.
And it was ingratiating is annoying. I just said, screw it. The hell with you. I don't care.
Even Alex says, he's like, the Alex, you were saying like banter and stuff, like don't script that. But it's like, no, you can teach that. You can teach how to have natural. You can write that script. You can learn to write that banter.
Every movie you've ever seen, every TV show you've ever seen, the banter is scripted, but you can deliver it if you know what you're doing.
In a natural way.
Yeah.
It's true.
But that is one good lesson, which is if you have somebody untrained, Don't give them a script because they aren't going to. Like, that's painful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's for them, especially. I mean, it's for your company, too. But I mean, for them also, it's like, that's really hard. And it's really scary. What is it? Wasn't there an old thing? I was like, people were more afraid of public speaking than Jeff.
Sure. Like, it's the scariest thing. Everybody's had a dream of standing in front of an audience naked or whatever. And it's just terrifying. So instead, go to rowdyskeleton.com and get a little training. I think that's absolutely required for any business that has any public component.
Thanks,
and I really agree about the online preparing people for the inevitable harassment is also very important. I wish I'd done that with a lot of our hosts.
And it is inevitable.
Because it is inevitable and nothing you can do about
Even
it.
In a small amount, it's inevitable.
Yeah. Everybody, you're doing it in public, so everybody has an opinion.
Yep.
Let me take a break. Some final thoughts with our wonderful panel, Alex Wilhelm from TechCrunch, Ashley Esquetha of Rowdy Skeleton, and her new book, Art of Psychonauts 2. Our show today brought to you by Grammarly Go. Hey, if you're writing, it's awesome. We tried it in beta for a long time because we're all doing a lot more communicating than ever before. Whether you're writing a thank you note or creating a business plan, give yourself a helping hand with Grammarly Go. It's a communication assistant powered by, generative AI. It's really a fun thing to have by your side, and it is a great way to solve writer's block, to get you unstuck, to get you, even with an email or a note, it helps you compose intelligently. You write the prompt into Grammarly Go. It will generate high-quality writing, so you don't have to do all that wordsmithing. But then you can also personalize it, customize your style of communication. There's a button called Set Voice. You can use the tone indicator at the top of the Grammarly Go window and then personalize your tone if you want it to be more formal or more casual or kind of neutral. You can choose personable, confident, empathetic, engaging, witty, or direct. Sometimes when Lisa and I are writing emails to staff, direct is not the problem. We maybe want to soften it up a little bit. Grammarly Go will help you with that. Grammarly Go understands your unique context, your preferred voice, but even more importantly, your goals to generate high-quality writing quickly with just a few quick clicks. You can ideate, you can compose, you can rewrite, you can reply thoughtfully. And you, by the way, you don't have to provide it with a prompt. You can actually send it text and have it rewrite for tone, clarity, and length. Grammarly Go helps you fine-tune your writing to reflect your personal style and be effective in any situation. Select the text you want to rewrite. Activate Grammarly Go. Boom. It's rewritten. Sounds more exciting, maybe, or more professional. Maybe more direct, more inspirational. You can do that. It's really a fun tool. You'll be amazed at what you can do with Grammarly Go. Go to grammarly.com/go to download and learn more about Grammarly Go. Another thing I'm going to throw into this ad. Grammarly is a fantastic software company out of Ukraine. They are working hard. They deserve our support. They're doing a great job. They make a great product. Grammarly, grammarly.com/go. Give it a try. You can try it out, and I think you'll be very impressed. Grammarly Go. We had a fun week this week on Twitter. Oh, indeed we did. Thank goodness we've memorialized this in this fabulous video.
Did you read the New Yorker article on the people in the Taco Bell's innovation lab?
I've got a printout here somewhere. I want to read that, yes. But
you can read it right here.
I've used my free article, Stacey.
You don't subscribe to the New Yorker?
You don't subscribe to the New Yorker?
What is wrong with you, my friend?
You look like a New Yorker.
I know. He looks like an Ed Gein cartoon.
Previously on Twit, Tech News Weekly.
Apollo's developer, Christian Selig, joins us to talk about the Reddit blackout and why Apollo may be closing down on June 30th.
There's been weird allegations where they said I've like tried to blackmail them and stuff, which thankfully I recorded the call and said, showed there that wasn't the case at all. So there's like kind of just this bad blood aspect where they really seem to hate third-party apps for some reason.
Windows Weekly.
The government is suing to keep Microsoft from sneaking in buying Activision.
I read the FTC play the other way around. This looks like a mechanism to force the FTC to make a decision. Like the reason to get the injunction is to expedite the case.
Club Twit exclusive.
What got you into the whole open source world to begin with?
So in March of 1999, back in the before times, I had a car accident. My head went through the window, and I had amnesia.
Wow.
And still, I don't remember anything before March of 99. We couldn't afford to have me retrain myself to do IT, and Linux was free.
Twit.tv, your source for the latest tech insights.
And learn a lot about our hosts. I had no idea Sean had that experience. That's fascinating. If you are not yet a member of Club Twit, don't forget that Sean Powers interview and many of the things that happen in our Club Twit Discord, including, I'm very excited, our interview, Fireside Chat with Hugh Howey, the author of Wool, the books that inspired Silo, the Apple TV Plus series. That's coming up in a couple of weeks. The Terraformers, our book club with Stacey Higginbotham. Of course, we have a lot of other exclusive programming in Club Twit, including Hands on Mac with Micah Sargent, Hand on Windows with Paul Thurrott, the Untitled Linux Show, our home theater geeks, which we've brought back thanks to our club members with Scott Wilkinson. $7 a month. You get ad-free versions of all of our shows. You get extra shows we don't do anywhere else. You get access to the Discord, which is absolutely the best social network ever. It's just a great community of other Twit listeners talking about everything that geeks love, including comic books and videos, and yes, animated GIFs, you see, yes. Twit.tv/ClubTwit. If you're not yet a member, check it out. $7 a month. It's not expensive, but it sure makes a difference to us. Thank you in advance. I think we pretty much covered everything. I should mention that that story we were talking about on Windows Weekly, the FTC was worried that Microsoft would just go and merge with Blizzard just anyway. And so they actually got an injunction from a judge, a temporary restraining order, saying you can't make the deal while reviews go through. Is that unusual, Alex? It seems to me that they would say it's on hold until the FTC is final.
I don't want to get too far over my skis here, because this is a part of law involving technology where I'm not the greatest expert. But if they were concerned about that, we have to at least presume that it was a possibility.
I think Microsoft was planning it. Yeah.
Yeah. And don't forget what Microsoft's top lawyer said about the UK's complaints about the deal. He was brutal about it. So I think these companies are pretty much accustomed to getting their way and don't like being told no, and we're going to force this through. So I'm proud that the U.S. government has discovered that it has at least a couple of vertebrae in its spine. Congratulations. Go team.
Yeah. And Microsoft can't sneak in the acquisition ahead of time. The administrative judge hears the case in the U.S. in August. I don't think the U.K. is backing down. I think Microsoft's going to appeal that. This is all about the merger with Ashley's husband and brother, the Activision Blizzard Esquetha merger.
Sorry for my comments about the merger. Maybe it'll be
good. No, I don't. I mean, I'm a neutral. I'm like genuinely a neutral third party. I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen. And so I'm just watching it. I'm just kind of here with popcorn being like, I'm not sure what's going to happen, but hopefully whatever happens like means that my husband still has a job. Like, that's all I care about. So,
I'm sure he will.
I like health insurance. And so that's all I care about.
Yeah. What is your husband's doing the esports thing. What's your brother doing there?
He's a game producer on World of Warcraft.
Oh, nice.
He started his... my brother started his Blizzard career on Diablo 3 doing QA.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I like to say, I tell him he got his job because of me, because he was very bummed out. He had gone through a breakup and was like very miserable. And I was like, hey, I got to go cover the World of Warcraft Cataclysm launch. Like, can you just come with me? And he was like, I need a camera guy. So just come with me. And he's like, okay.
That's
so we went
sweet.
And we ended up just like, because we both had already pre-ordered the game, we didn't have to wait in the big line. And I was just covering it for YouTube and for my YouTube channel. And so we just happened to sit down next to a guy at the food trucks who worked at Blizzard and who was working on Diablo, and was like, you should apply. You'd be great at, you know, I think you would love it at Blizzard. And he was just like, there's no way I'm going to get a job at Blizzard. And because he was working at Target. He was working in the electronics department at Target at the time. And so he got a QA job on Diablo 3, and then he's been there ever since.
And he worked his way up, and he's now producing World of Warcraft.
Yeah, he's a game producer on World of Warcraft.
That's pretty amazing.
I'm very proud of him. He's like, first of all, my brother's awesome, and we love video games, and we play Diablo like literally every night. If you think I'm a Diablo fan, like, he's like,
so
I don't even.
Did your mother, when you were kids, say, what are you going to do, play video games for a living?
No, that was my dad. that was my dad. My dad now tells all of his patients, he's like, I used to tell my son all the time, like, you got to get outside, play less video games. Like, I'm really kicking myself.
Well,
I can't believe I was totally wrong. My mom was actually, she bought me an NES when I was three. For my third birthday, my NES, my Nintendo. And I used to watch her play video games. And that was how I got into games.
So your mom was a gamer.
She totally bought it for herself. She did not buy an NES for a three-year-old. She bought it for herself. I remember watching my mom and just thinking she was like amazing because she was playing Castlevania 2 Simon's Quest. And I just thought she was a genius for finding the invisible mansion.
So you're not going to have any trouble if your son decides he wants to play video games.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Totally fine. But he loves music. Who knows what he's going to do? He's like... He contains multitudes.
I think to some degree, the worst thing you can do is say, no matter what, you can't play video games, because that makes it this forbidden fruit. And then it's all of a sudden.
We play a little Mario Kart. Like, he's got, we don't play a lot of video games, but he's, but we play some. He likes Animal Crossing and Mario Kart. And he calls Splatoon Squid Game, which is very funny to me. He's like, Mommy, let's play Squid Game. That's, and I'm so like, cute. Let's not play Squid Game because that is very dangerous. But we can play Splatoon. That's fine.
I am going to let you go be with your husband. Wish him a happy Father's Day. I apologize for dragging you away on this special, special day. But have it's so great to see you, Ashley. Thank you for being here.
Happy to show up and not shut up about anything. Yeah, thanks for having me.
I don't want you ever to shut up about anything. Rowdyskeleton.com if you want to hire Ashley and Ross to do your media training. It's a must have. And look for The Art of Psychonauts 2. It comes out this sometime in the next...
I think this summer.
Yeah, this summer. Next couple of months. Yeah.
Art of Psychonauts 2, and of course on the Twitter, Ashley Esquetha. Thank you, Ashley. Esqueda. Thank you, Ashley. Real new father, 6 month father. This is your first Father's Day, and please apologize to Liza. I'm so grateful to her that Alex could be here. Alex Wilhelm, proud papa.
Yeah, well, I haven't gone in and said hi, so it's been 3 hours of me not knowing how bedtime went. So we'll see how it goes when I get back in the house.
If she's mad, have her call me, okay?
Trust me, I will.
And I know a secret place in the basement where she can lock you. You don't know this, Ashley, but Alex lives in my childhood home. Where I did not play video games.
Yeah, one of those small world moments.
Wild.
Isn't that wild? Yeah, in Rhode Island, of all places. Yeah.
I can't believe it.
It's a long story, but everybody at Twit knows it, so I won't repeat it.
Yeah, but I'm going to say, like, you know, it was weird to wake up on Father's Day for the first time in my life and have it be about me.
It's about you. Yeah.
You know? Like, yeah, it was strange.
You deserve
it. But I will say, my kiddo is the most beautiful and amazing thing in the entire world. So
of course it was a
surprisingly lovely day.
Yeah. Happy
she
Father's
is
day.
Very cute.
Aww. Like, oh dude, Ashley, you don't even I
gladly now follow you on Twitter, and so I await the barrage. If I'll find you on Signal or some other place, Discord, whatever. I await the barrage of adorable baby photos.
Aww. She is
chonky and hilarious. And I just
can't.
Are
either of you concerned about putting pictures of your kids online?
As mine has been getting older, he wants to see them, like, after I take them. And so I have slowed down quite a bit on posting more recent pictures of him. I mean, if I take a real banger of a portrait like that, I don't ever want to post anything that would make him feel embarrassed if he saw it in 5 years. Yeah. So I think that's my rule.
It's not a security issue. It's you just don't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want him to feel embarrassed. And I also it's like, it's not a security, so much security thing. I don't post a lot of pictures of him, but like I talk about him a lot. So
yeah.
Yeah. So we just don't show her face. Like, I think after like she was a week old, we just stopped. So like, I just pulled this up and like the last photo of her on Twitter is the back of her head in her room. And then there's a picture of me feeding her, but I put a little emoji on her face. Just like, it's everyone's own choices are fine. But like my view is it's her body. It's her privacy.
And so, we don't know, 10 years from now when that picture will still be on the internet, what kinds of things government and industry can do with it.
I think with like deep fakes and AI, I mean, it's just there's a lot of things like that. So I have slowed down pretty significantly on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alex is Alex on Twitter, although
it's true.
His handle is currently Alex Tired.
it's because I don't mean to break new ground here, but I'm tired.
Yeah.
All the time.
I understand.
Because between three dogs and one baby, not enough sleep.
I know.
Two dogs and one baby, and I'm sorry to say that does not change. It just gets different tired.
Yeah. Well, my daughter's 31, my son's 28, and I'm still tired. So.
Yeah. See, it never ends.
I love you guys. Oh, it's so great to have
you. I'm sure
you
on. I make my mom exhausted all the time. So even as a fully grown adult, so I get it. I get it.
Thank you so much, Alex. Thank you so much, Ashley. You guys are wonderful. Thank you all to the audience. As always, we couldn't do it without you. If you want to watch Twit happen live, it's every Sunday right after Ask the Tech Guys. That's 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, 2100 UTC. Of course, after the fact, you can get a show because it's a podcast. Really, the live recording we just do, like I said, for the energy and the fun of doing it live. But after the fact, you go to twit.tv, and that's our website. Get a copy. Or you can go to the YouTube channel dedicated to This Week in Tech, or you could even, probably best thing to do, subscribe in your favorite podcast player. And that way, it's always ready for you on a Monday morning before you go to work. Something to listen to. Thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye. This is amazing.